Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Coast or the Central Atlantic, well, you know, the Eastern time zone. It's top five. Showtime, and I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Tuesday. This is The Horn, conversation radio at its very finest. Yes, it's Tuesday. It's Tuesday, the 15th of March. As noted on the program last night, beware the Ides of March. I hope the Ides of March have treated you well. And that no one bearing daggers has come your way. You'll pardon me a little bit of a historical digression, I hope, at the beginning of the program before we get on to other things. Because it is my considered opinion that the Ides of March probably have as much or more to do with the shape of human history in the last 2,000 years than any other single event, the crucifixion included. Why? Well, maybe to start with, because some of the excesses that led Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, to beg his fellow countrymen to please behave themselves would not necessarily have obtained had Caesar not been assassinated. For those of you who have never read it, I highly recommend Michael Parenti's The Assassination of Julius Caesar. It's a brief read and a fascinating one. What needs to be understood is that in the older world, even in the last couple of centuries, it was always understood or put forward, and of course the people putting forward this theory were always part of the landed gentry and the moneyed class and the propertied class, that Caesar was trying to become a tyrant. He had been voted dictatorial status by the Senate of Rome, and he had been then subsequently given beyond the 5-year powers, then he was at 10 years, and then he was declared dictator for life. All of which, at least the you can't necessarily say that Caesar was out there campaigning for it. What he was campaigning for was a Roman society that would have a little bit more compassion for the least of its citizens. And the patricians, the wealthy, and the knights, the wealthy money classes, opposed him at every turn. Every time that Gaius Julius Caesar would attempt to make life a little bit less miserable for the most miserable of Rome's citizens, the wealthy, moneyed class would try to stop him in his tracks. This included people like Marcus Porcius Cato, and a number of others, eventually leading to civil war with Pompey, Gnaeus Pompeius, self-styled Magnus. And so it was on this day, in the year 44, before the current Common Era, a gang of wealthy, moneyed, privileged men slew Caesar. thereby throwing into absolute chaos the Roman world of the time. Oddly enough, we actually have historical accounts of what happened. The murderers were at a loss as to how to kill him. At one point, they put forward an idea of attacking him during his daily walk and throwing him off a bridge. 100 years before, or a little less than 100 years before, after the murder of Tiberius Gracchus, his body had been thrown in the Tiber River. Eventually, they decided to murder him as he attended a Senate meeting before taking off and leading his legions against the Parthian menace, the Parthians being the successor empire to that of the Persians. In other words, Iran. Things were getting hot in Rome. One writer, I believe it was Nicolaus of Damascus, said his friends were alarmed at certain rumors and tried to stop him going to the Senate House, as did his doctors, for he was suffering from one of his occasional dizzy spells. It's thought, by the way, that Caesar may have been epileptic, or possibly either hyper or hypoglycemic. His wife, Calpurnia, especially, who was frightened by some visions in her dreams, clung to him and said that she would not let him go out that day. But Brutus, Marcus Junius Brutus, to whom Caesar had been practically a father, one of the conspirators, who was then thought of as a firm friend, came up and said, "What is this, Caesar? Are you a man to pay attention to a woman's dreams and the idle gossip of stupid men, and to insult the Senate by not going out, as, although it has honored you and been specially summoned by you? Listen to me. Cast aside the forebodings of all these people, and come. The Senate has been in session waiting for you since early this morning." This swayed Caesar, and he left. And so it was that he went, the place where the Senate was accustomed to meet was down in the Roman Forum, but it could not be used because it had been burnt in the riots in the aftermath of the murder of Publius Claudius, another advocate in favor of the poor and downtrodden, by people in the hire of the patrician class, in particular a man named Milo. It was murder outright. So that building couldn't be used for the Senate meeting, and instead the Senate met in the Theater of Pompey, the first permanent theater structure built in the city of Rome, which had appended to it a temple structure. If you are at all familiar with the layout of Rome, there is the the Torre Argentina, I believe, is the area, and there are ruined temples there, and even if you look at it from above, like on Google Earth, you can still see the humongous shape of what had been the Theater of Pompey. And so it was that he walked from his home in the Forum, a public building called the Domus Publica, the public house, wherein resided the Vestal Virgins and the Pontifex Maximus, which Caesar was, the chief priest. He walked, I'm not sure what, about a kilometer and a half, maybe, that morning. So that about, 10 a.m., 11 a.m., he got to the Senate, went inside. One of the conspirators kept Marc Antony, from going into the building. And then the conspirators slew him, stabbed him to death. It is highly unlikely that he did utter the words that Shakespeare ascribes to him, namely, "Et tu, Brute, and you, Brutus?" What is reported is that he tried to cover his head so that people would not see him in the agony of his death throes, and tried to cover his legs out of the typical Roman sense of modesty and dignity. All was centered upon one's dignitas. The Senate rose in respect for his position when they saw him entering. Those who were to have part in the plot stood near him. Right next to him went Tilius Cimber, whose brother had been exiled by Caesar. Under pretext of a humble request on behalf of this brother, Cimber approached and grasped the mantle of his toga, seeming to want to make a more positive move with his hands upon Caesar. Caesar wanted to get up and use his hands, but was prevented by Cimber and became exceedingly annoyed. That was the moment for the men to set to work. All quickly unsheathed their daggers and rushed at him. First, Sir Willius Casca struck him with the point of the blade on the left shoulder and a little above the collarbone. He had been aiming for that, but in the excitement he missed. Caesar rose to defend himself, and in the uproar Casca shouted out in Greek to his brother. The latter heard him and drove his sword into the ribs. After a moment, Cassius made a slash at his face, and Decimus Brutus pierced him in the side, all of these being men whom Caesar had elevated and helped in their careers. While Cassius Longinus was trying to give him another blow, he missed and struck Marcus Brutus on the hand. Minucius also hit out at Caesar and hit Rubrius in the thigh. They were just like men doing battle against him, the ancient historian notes. Under the mass of wounds, he fell at the foot of Pompey's statue. Everyone wanted to seem to have had some part in the murder, and there was not one of them who failed to strike his body as it lay there until, wounded 35 times, he breathed his last. Cleopatra was in the city at the time. She had her physician with him, and it was his, and I believe it was his examination of the body that gives us actually these details and provided the first actual written post-mortem examination in Western history. The learned physician noted that he would have survived all but one of the wounds, driven straight into his heart. Thinking, or claiming, that they were acting in the name of Roman liberty, which the patrician moneyed, propertied assassins always liked to think they were doing, when they were actually only protecting their property, their wealth. Funny, doesn't change, does it? Ran out screaming that they had struck blows for liberty, and then went and hid in the temple of Jupiter Optimus Maximus on the Capitoline Mount. Gaius Julius Caesar's body was left to sit in its congealed pool of blood for hours until three slaves finally came along, put it on a cart, and carried it back down into the forum to the Domus Publica, where they presented it to Calpurnia. And therein began a period of chaos the likes of which the world has seldom known, until eventually all the conspirators, every last one of them, were hunted down and killed. At first there was an attempt to try to not do that, but there was a popular hue and cry against them. At the impromptu cremation of Caesar's remains, many pieces from the forum were used to build high the pyre. Not, as George W. Bush once said, build the pie higher. And at his funeral games, a comet hung in the sky. And Gaius Julius Caesar was immediately deified because it was seen as proof that his spirit had ascended into the heavens and unto the realm of the gods. There was to be no Parthian campaign, and because there was no successful Parthian campaign, the Parthians would continue to be a menace to Rome. The whole Caesar, the whole Mark Antony and Cleopatra debacle developed because Caesar was assassinated. Caesar, who had been raised in the Suburra, the stews of Rome, had grown up alongside a significant Jewish population. He had profound respect for them and had not, in his opportunities, abused the Jewish people in their homeland, so that one may argue that the uprisings that subsequently came might not have had he lived, as I noted, thereby obviating any necessity for a an itinerant day laborer with novel notions of peace and harmony to beg his fellow countrymen not to engage in violence, for which he was then murdered in his own right. For me, March the 15th is there are two seminal dates in history that stand out in my mind. March the 15th, 44 BCE, and November the 22nd, 1963 CE. They are both assassinations, and they both absolutely tilt the known world upon its axis. And Caesar is said to have been warned about going out on this date by a soothsayer who said, "Beware the Ides of March." To which Caesar replied as he passed him that day, "Well, old man, the Ides of March are here, and so am I." To which the old soothsayer, seer, whatever, replied, "The Ides of March are here, but are not yet gone." Ron and Raleigh noting Parthians? Hey, Bob, were the Parthians building a nuclear power plant? Not so much, but the fact of the matter was they had proven an opponent with which the Romans had not thus far been able to cope. And it is likely that only a military genius the likes of Caesar could have done it. Had he broken the Parthians, you can even make the argument, well, the empire doesn't develop as the empire developed because Augustus doesn't come along for quite some time, if he comes along at all. You can also argue that because of that, you don't get the circumstances in which Muhammad arose, and so you don't get Islam. It's a fascinating game, and people in love with history can't resist playing the what-if game from time to time, and I'm doing some of that in my own right. But these things are worth paying attention to, not solely from a speculative standpoint, but to recognize the long history of murder and mayhem that attends people, whether they be Julius Caesar, whether they be Jesus Christ, Socrates, and any number of others who suggest ways forward that don't involve the abuse of the poor. And thus, I urge you to consider for a moment the world as you know it and live in it, and what might have been had Caesar listened to other voices and stayed home on the Ides of March. 20 minutes past the hour. It is Tuesday, and I'm thinking I likely will not be on the air tomorrow night or Thursday. I'll likely be traveling, but I won't know that for certain until probably until after the program. I'll try to tweet or Facebook or something, so just check that out along the way, and you'll see if we're going to be live tomorrow night. If I don't send something out about being on the road, or somebody doesn't post something about me being on the road, then I'll be right here. But it remains to be seen. More than likely, I will be on the road and that makes Friday kind of dodgy for getting back. But we'll try. We'll certainly try. Before we go into the any further into the meat of the program, let me note that I want to thank everybody who chipped in the last 24 hours to make things a little bit better with Horn Finances and our ongoing attempt to keep the bills paid and actually have a third month in the black. And I can tell you that with this being the midpoint of the month of March, we only need 22 people tonight. 22 people to go hit the PayPal button or use the snail mail address to the tune of $10 each. In other words, members of the Thrifty 250 to keep us on track for the first half of the month. That's doing pretty good. Things are actually looking up, and it's pretty doggone impressive. So we need 22 people. We need 22 people to kick in 10 bucks apiece or some combination thereof, and we'll be done with fundraising for the first half of the month. The PayPal button and the snail mail address are both at headonradionetwork.com, and the tab at the top, working just a few over from the left at the very top, a tab called Contribute, and the information is right there. And your participation is much, much appreciated. Jim sending in an email noting the Parthian shot. They always kill the men who try to make things better, don't they? Yeah, they do, Jim. And the important part is to define who they are. They always kill the men who try to make things better, don't they? Who are they? Without fail, it is always the moneyed class, the propertied class, the privileged class that strike down those not who want to eliminate the moneyed and propertied class, but merely want to make life just marginally better for the most fragile in a given society. As Caesar had tried to do, as you can argue Socrates had tried to do, just by trying to foster an interest in introspection and self-examination, as Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, tried to do. Stricken down in the prime of life. Exactly, Betsy. Texas Betsy noting, you think we'd have more gender equity if Caesar had told Brutus that he does listen to his wife? Yeah. Now, there was not much in the way of gender... That's fascinating you would bring that up, Betsy. There was not much in the way of gender equity in ancient Rome. Women were to be not heard and seldom seen, to modify the old saying. Oddly enough, over in Egypt, however, women worked and went about in public and held down jobs and important positions. That was all wiped out with the elimination of the last Ptolemy, namely Cleopatra, by Octavian, who would later become Caesar Augustus. It was perpetuated by the rising Christian church and the final nails of self-empowerment, the final nails in that coffin were driven by the rise of Islam when it overran Egypt. Oh, look, there's religion ruining everything again. Jim uses the phrase the Parthian shot. A Parthian shot, fascinating phrase. A Parthian shot. The Parthians were noted and had success against Roman legions because they tended to fight on horseback and they were expert bowmen. And a Parthian shot is a shot fired going away so that the person doing the shooting is actually out of range but can still do considerable damage. Caesar actually had a plan for dealing with such contingencies. He was never able to put it into into practice. Had he not been assassinated, he would have left. His legions were already on the way. He would have left for the Parthian campaign in a matter of days after the Ides of March. Does all of this have anything to do with current events? I'll leave that to you to decide. A fascinating bit of trivia just to share with you. Last night during the program, in one of the conversations, I referenced the fact that at the subduction zone between the North American and Asian tectonic plates, some 3 inches, the North American plate goes toward Asia by some 3 inches per year. You want another mind boggler? You want to know what you already know very, very viscerally and very, very visually what an earthquake can do? You want to know what it did on a global scale? Granted, it's a time unit that we can't conceptualize anything this small any better than we can conceptualize numbers like billions. But the earthquake in Japan on Friday shortened the length of the day by about 1.8 microseconds because it changed our wobble. By about 1.8 microseconds, the earthquake caused the Earth to rotate that much faster. So you actually lost time as a result of the quake there. That fascinates me. And here's another one for you. The main island of Japan, if you can imagine this, Japan's main island moved about 8 feet. Moved about 8 feet. And the entire Earth's figure axis moved by about 6.5 inches. That is a manifestation of some power. It's hard to tell exactly how bad the situation is in Japan right now. It is certainly bad, but there may be some hope that radiation levels are falling a little bit. At least that's the update that I read just before coming on air. On the other hand, the death toll has now risen to 10,000 people dead or missing. We will be a long time with this story. The question is whether, and this really is the failure of the for-profit media, the question is whether it will be kept topmost in our minds or whether it will be forgotten in large part, like Haiti, like Katrina, like the Southeast Asian tsunami, because of the profoundly limited attention span of the for-profit media. Other things? Well, yes, and everything pales and seems rather, I don't know, trivial by comparison, so there's no harm in just going straight for the trivia. And by that, I mean to offer you, yes, of course, Glenn Beck. Now, since I'm going to be on the road tomorrow, most likely, I didn't feel like I was violating any tenets of the program by bringing us a little bit of prayer meeting on a Tuesday kind of thing. and this would have been perfect for prayer meeting. Glenn Beck is a drug-addled, dry drunk, rotten-headed freak whose mind is poisoned by, among other things, religion. And so, consequently, it comes as no surprise, I guess, that a religiously addled individual would who worships a god of love, we might recall. In particular, Glenn Beck worships a god of love who comes from the planet Kolob and requires him to wear magic underwear. Glenn Beck worships this god of love who, at the same time apparently, manifests his love by tormenting his creation. No, really, I wish I was kidding. Sadly, I ain't. And I don't understand what it is with wingnuts and fundamentalist wingnuts. I don't know why it is that Pastor John Hagee, starve, felt the need to declare that Katrina was a manifestation of his loving God's wrath upon people who were who had a different sexuality from him. I don't know. But it's always burbling just barely beneath the surface of these religiously insane, deluded psychopaths. And so it is, in fact, with Glenn Beck, who took to the airwaves to explain why it was, that the earthquake happened in Japan. I wish someone could explain to me why it is that my audio doesn't work. But it doesn't. So we'll just go with the quote. It was yesterday, you know. It was yesterday on his radio show. I guess he saves the real crazy crap for his radio show. And on that radio show yesterday, Beck told his Beckerheads, well, I'm not saying God is, you know, causing earthquakes. I'm not saying that either. Jesus, he's turned into Homer Simpson.
Homer, have you been licking toads again?
I'm not licking toads. Now, I'm not saying God is, you know, causing earthquakes. I'm not saying that either. But whatever you call God, well, there's a message being sent. And that is, hey, you know that stuff we're doing? Not really working out real well. Maybe we should stop doing some of it. I'm just saying. I honestly wish I was kidding. I would feel much better if I was kidding. But no, he really said that. Here we go. Here's the audio. Thanks to Media Matters. Oh,
he can't see the connections here. Now, look, I'm not saying God is, causing earthquakes. Well, no, I'm not saying that I'm not saying that either. God, what God does is God's business. I have no idea. But I'll tell you this, whether you call it Gaia or whether you call it Jesus, there's a message being sent, and that is, hey, you know that stuff we're doing? Not really working out real well. Maybe we should stop doing some of it. I'm just saying.
Okay, Glenn, what is it that we're not doing that we ought to be doing? I mean, because, you know, I can halfway get on board with some of that, can't you? Maybe the perpetual tormenting of the planet is beginning to tell on us a little bit. I could buy into that. The Earth is, after all, a living organism. Maybe that's what he means. Nah, that's not what he means.
yesterday I got home, and I was thinking about all the messages that I could bring in, all the things that I could tell you, and, oh, I've got stuff on Hezbollah. I have stuff on radical Islam in America that'll make your eyes fall out. Or I could just tell you the answer.
Oh, tell us, Glenn. Tell us the answer.
And the answer is, buckle up.
Buckle up.
Buckle up.
Wait, okay, I hit the button precipitously. Let's get the answer here. I thought it was going to be to buy gold. It usually is.
I could just tell you the answer. And the answer is, buckle up. Buckle up, because it's going to be a bumpy ride. Make sure you keep your arms and legs inside the car at all times, because things are going to get bumpy. And just a few reminders there at the beginning, as this roller coaster takes off, always a good safety tip. Keep your arms and legs in. Don't do anything stupid. What do you say we follow the big top 10?
Wait, here it is. Oh, here's what we need to do. Write this down. Get the date. It's the 15th of March, 2011, and Glenn Beck has the answer for preventing earthquakes. Now, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad over in Iran says that the answer to not having earthquakes is for gay people to stop being quite so gay. Well, Glenn Beck doesn't. Nah, he's not quite there yet, but if you got him good and liquored up, he would be, but never mind. No, he's got a different idea.
You can call him Moses' Ten Commandments or yes, Ten Rules of Thumb. What do you say we start doing those things? Because the things we are doing really suck. And
okay, Ten Rules of Thumb. Why don't we start doing those things? Somebody cue up Gnarls Barkley. You know what I'm talking about, right? Yeah, you know the song I'm thinking of. Yeah. I'm sure you do. Yeah, this one.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions had an echo in so much space. And when you're out there, without care, yeah, I was out of touch. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough. I just knew too much.
Yeah.
Does that make me crazy? Does that make me crazy? Possibly. And all that you will have in the time of your life. But think twice. That's my only
bless your soul. That's kind of like, God bless him, he can't help it. So, if I understand correctly, if we only start following the Ten Commandments, there will be no more earthquakes. Have I got that right? Because that's kind of what it sounded like. Yeah, right. Let's check back in with Glenn Beck real quick. Make sure I got that right. Yeah, here we go.
Don't do anything stupid. What do you say we follow the big top 10? You can call them Moses' Ten Commandments or yes, Ten Rules of Thumb. What do you say we start doing those things?
Ten Rules of Thumb. Rules of Thumb. Let's see. When I think of Rules of Thumb, I think of the classic admonition to measure twice and cut once. That's a good rule of thumb. I think of, what's another good rule of thumb? I before E, except after C, except when sounded as an A, as in neighbor and way. Rules of thumb. Somehow I don't get rule of thumb out of this. One, you shall have no other gods before me. That's a capital M, me. Two, you shall not make for yourself a carved image, any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. No statues. As long as they're carved. Now, nowadays, you know, if you stop at Stuckey's or Pottery Barn or somewhere, a lot of that crap's been injection molded, so we don't know exactly how the deity feels about injection molding or composite casting, or we don't. No carvings. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. Which means, for instance, blithely claiming that God is telling you something when God isn't speaking to anybody. Right. It's not goddamn. That's not taking the Lord's name in vain. Because you know what? If you've ever dropped a hammer on your toe or pulled a cabinet door out into your head, God damn it! You really do. You really do. You want God to immolate that hammer or smite your cabinet door because it makes you mad. That's not taking the Lord's name. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. That's not remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. You know, you're keeping it holy by remembering it. That's remember the Sabbath day, keep it holy. Whichever day happens to be the Sabbath. Right. Five, honor your father and your mother. Six, you shall not murder. So let's see. One, two, three, and four are all religious dogma that may or may not apply because they weren't even Christianities to begin with. Jesus himself said, no, those really don't count anymore. I refer you to Matthew, the 22nd chapter of Matthew. Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? And Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. The only fun part is he made up that second commandment. Six, don't murder. Seven, don't commit adultery. Eight, don't steal. Nine, don't bear false witness against your neighbor. In other words, don't get on the stand and swear to tell the truth and then say, I saw him, he did it with his little hatchet, when you know he didn't. And then 10, of course, if this is the Decalogue you're following, because there's about 90 million other variations upon it, if you want to go digging around, it's really not worth your time. Don't covet your neighbor's house, don't covet your neighbor's wife, don't covet his male servant, nor his female servant. Don't covet his ox nor his donkey. That's ass. Don't covet his ass nor anything that is your neighbor's. Don't covet that. If you want something like it, that's one thing. But don't want what he has. Because it leads to trouble. You know, 10, 9, 8, 7, and 6 can all be classed as these things are going to lead to trouble. Don't do them. But the thing is, I can't find anything about geology in here. Where's the, you shall not murder, and if you do, earthquakes will happen? Where is, you shall not commit adultery, and if you do, a tsunami will wipe out your nuclear reactors? Because call me crazy, I don't see it. Call Glenn Beck crazy, he does.
Because the things we are doing really suck. And they're not getting better.
Yeah, thanks, Media Matters. The heroes at Media Matters who sit there with bleeding ears listening to this crap so that you and I can have it handy to us as the time approaches when we need it. Ron and Raleigh asking, do the folks from Kolob know Yaqub the black Muslim in the giant spaceship who invented white people? Oh, don't do that. Don't do that to the people from planet Kolob. They're still convinced that Indians are Jews. Don't stir the pot, Ron. Oh, God. Oh, and this just in. Fire erupts at troubled reactor. Helicopters may be used for blazes. That's at the number four reactor. As Dennis Hopper once said, bad things, man. Bad things, man. But this is the insanity of Glenn Beck. If we would just follow the Ten Commandments, we wouldn't have earthquakes and... I mean, what's the difference between that and Bill O'Reilly saying, you know why you atheists fail? The tides. You atheists can't explain the tides. The tides come in, the tides go out, the tides come in, go out. You don't know why that happens. Except we do! Yeah, gravity, moon, big white light in the sky at night. Right, yeah, tides. How much existential space is there between Mahmoud Ahmad dinner jacket and Glenn Beck? Not a damn lot. Because they're both fundamentalists. Not because one's Muslim and one is Mormon or Christian or Kolobian or what the hell ever. Because they're both fundamentalists. Because they're both fundamentally unable to live in the rational world without believing in some sort of invisible sky being who is constantly, oh, I'm going to smite them with an earthquake. When it's merely the breathing of the planet. But that's not at all. And then there's Haley Barbour. Oh, wait, from Marty. Come on, Bob. This is coming from someone who follows, to use your words, white man's Islam. That's what Christian... Yeah. Fundamentalism, fundies. But then there's Haley Barbour. Really, not kidding. You know... I'm used to the stuff, and this is one of those Jesus I feel sorry for Barack Obama moments that is frequently followed by the Jesus Barack, you know, why would I feel sorry for you when you're doing what you're doing? Haley Barbour, governor of the state of Mississippi, where I recently was and was sort of uncomfortable every day. Haley Barbour, governor of the state of Mississippi. And he don't like that government money. And yet Haley Barbour was more than happy to take and squirrel away all of it that he could during the aftermath of Katrina and make sure that none of the people who actually needed it got it. You know, he's kind of a patrician in his own right. That's what that white moneyed class is in places like Mississippi. They're the same patricians who drove the daggers into the body of Julius Caesar. And they do it again. And they'd re-crucify Christ, re-gun down Gandhi, hand two cups of poison to Socrates. You get the idea. So Haley Barbour goes toddling up to Chicago. Got to remember not to say Yankee while I'm up here. To tell people in Chicago all about Barack Obama's failed economic policies. Bear in mind that when talking about failed economic policies, it's almost impossible not to talk about the fact that Haley Barbour, governor of Mississippi, is governor of the state which has the single highest percentage of poor people in the entire union at something around 23.1%. Yeah. But he stands there at the address in the Chicago Chamber of Commerce, and he says that...
the Obama administration has no trust in business, no sense of how entrepreneurs build new companies, no insight as to how small businesses create jobs. Has anybody in that administration ever signed the front side of a paycheck? No, really, he said that. Then I apologize. I'm reading my remarks from a teleprompter, but, you know, I'm here in Chicago. This is President Obama's hometown. So, you know, when in Rome, right? Takes a hell of a lot of nerve to talk about Barack Obama and say when in Rome on the day before the Ides of freaking March. Not that I expect Haley Barbour to have the first damn clue what the Ides of March are. But then there was this. He goes to blathering on about how he says that the Obama administration had suddenly started talking to business and extending the Bush tax cuts, and he says. Now he's meeting with CEOs, extending the Bush tax cuts, and even speaking at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, talking to business leaders about the economy. Now that's change even I can believe in. Ho, ho, ho. Ain't that a knee slapper? I just thought that went up on the plane up, y'all. Ho, ho, ho. Change I can believe in. Ho, 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 ho. But then this little itsy bitsy moment. This remark. That no one seems to have picked up on except me. I went running over to the usual suspects websites that I check before any given program, and didn't you guys notice this? Because I ain't the sharpest knife in the drawer. But I heard this at about 6 o'clock this morning and went, ha! Maybe it's just because I speak that behind the cornbread curtain cracker ass code a little better than your average liberal. Maybe that's it. Well, damn it, Bob, what is it you're talking about? Well, let me explain. After talking about how Barack Obama's done tech to talking to CEOs and extending the Bush tax cuts and meeting with the business leaders and so forth, then Haley Barbour said that the Obama administration, and there's truth in this, is reverting to conservative economic policies. In other words, doing the wrong crap, like extending the Bush tax cuts. But it's how he described it. Wait for this. He said Barack Obama is reverting to conservative economic policies with, quote, the zeal of a convert that just heard the gospel. Now, without the cornpone accent, the zeal of a convert that just heard the gospel. Damn. Holy mackerel. Bless my soul. The zeal of a convert that just heard the gospel. Now, what does that mean to you? What does that say to you? What is that? Well, that's dragging out the old he's a Kenyan Muslim fascist communist with a deep-seated hatred of white people. No, it's actually just the Muslim smear. Well, if he's anything, he's got the zeal of a recent convert who's just heard the gospel. Ho, ho. See how I reminded them that he's a Muslim? I did it. I was a proud of. Oh, I'm ready to be president, says Haley Barbour. With the zeal of a convert that's just heard the gospel. Oh, my goodness, I got to write that one down. I'm something. Yeah.
with the zeal of a convert that has just heard the gospel, thereby dog whistling to the faithful that, you know, he's probably not even really an American. Mother. And yet, I heard that. Did I miss it? Is that not what I think it was? Because I'm pretty sure it is what I heard. But are we just immune to it now? Or really, do I just have a highly tuned sensitivity to that cracker-ass cornbread garbage? So we'll take a break here in a second. It is Tuesday, and we've got Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen with the Green News Report coming up. But first, an email in from our buddy Joe Ray. Welcome home, Bob. Right-wingers must disbelieve the science of tides for a good reason. One of Charles Darwin's brothers was the scientist that discovered the math that predicts the tides. As we all know, the Darwin family is the spawn of Satan and the chief enemy of a good Christian education in America. True. So therein begins the first hour of the program this evening. You're welcome to jump in and engage in this conversation any way you may feel moved so to do. It's Tuesday evening. May not be here tomorrow night. So, hallelujah, glory, pass me a snake, all that prayer meeting business. You're listening to America's listener-supported, emphasis on listener-supported, liberal voice. You're listening to the horn. And thanks to those of you who have kicked into the kitty here in the last few minutes. We're down to only needing 18 more members of the Thrifty 250 to get to the halfway point of our fundraising contributory cycle. Now, you know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. This is the horn.
We are gathered here today to get to this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else. The afterworld. A world of never-ending happiness. You can always see the sun. Day. Oh, night. So when you call up that shrink, it's Beverly Hills. You know the one. Locked down, it's the old rat. Instead of asking how much of your time, ask how much of your mind, baby. Cause in this life, things are much harder than the afterworld. This life, you're on your own. And if the elevator tries to break you down,
Looking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy, and we have the power to make our future happen. Of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, March 15th, 2011.
Natural disaster, humanitarian disaster, and now...
The further away you move from the power plants, the radiation level will become lower.
Man-made disaster, as 50 workers stand in the way of nuclear meltdown at Fukushima in Japan.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
The human toll here looks to be much worse than the economic toll, and we can be grateful for that.
Really? Really, Larry Kudlow? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, as if the situation across Japan today was not bad enough, the crisis at the nuclear power plant at Fukushima Daiichi continues to worsen, it seems, at this hour.
Yes, it's still a very fluid situation as plant workers are struggling to maintain control. It's now snowing in Japan in the hardest hit areas, complicating rescue efforts amid a deepening humanitarian crisis on the fifth day after a record earthquake and then record tsunami devastated northern Japan. Nearly 500,000 Japanese are living in temporary shelters with growing scarcity of food and water. The death toll is likely to rise to more than 10,000, with thousands more still listed as missing. Strong building codes are credited with saving many lives from the earthquake, but were no match for the record tsunami that, up to 30 feet high, pushed cars, houses, and even ships up to 6 miles inland. The man-made disaster, however, is still unfolding at Japan's stricken nuclear power plants in Fukushima Prefecture. Still a very fluid situation. 3 explosions and a fire at 4 reactors over 4 days at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant station have badly damaged nuclear reactors. This is now the second worst nuclear accident in world history, behind only the Chernobyl accident of 25 years ago.
And now far beyond what we saw at Three Mile Island when the world virtually came to a standstill there. We're now seeing that at 4 different reactors, at least now, in Japan.
Officials say the fire at reactor number 4 early Tuesday local time appears to have damaged the containment structure. Officials say the risk of further leakage is, quote, very high. Rising temperatures at reactors 5 and 6 also indicate problems with those cooling systems as well, but at this point they appear to be under control. 750 plant workers have been evacuated after dangerous spikes in radiation releases were detected. A crew of 50 workers remains behind at great personal risk to attempt to continue to cool the fuel in the reactors. The workers are all that stand in the way of a full meltdown and are now quarantined at the plant. A Cal Berkeley professor, Donald Orlander, estimates the workers must pump 50 gallons of seawater per minute into each reactor to prevent a meltdown. Prime Minister Naoto Kan, in an address to the nation Tuesday morning local time, which was Monday night U.S. time, has urged all residents to evacuate from within a 12-mile radius around the plant. Those within a 20-mile radius have been ordered to stay indoors and shelter in place.
The further away you move from the power plants, the radiation level will become lower. So beyond the 20-kilometer radius, the radiation level should be reduced quite much so that the harm to human health would be minimal or none at all. But still, of course, the radiation spread will depend on the wind speed and wind direction.
Nuclear plant owners and nations worldwide are examining their plants and emergency procedures. Germany and Switzerland have declared a temporary halt to further development and licensing of their aging nuclear power plants. And in the U.S., nuclear energy lobbyists are already fanning out over Capitol Hill to convince lawmakers that U.S. facilities are safe and to protect the nuclear industry subsidies.
We have faced a triumvirate of energy-related disasters here over the last year, including coal mine disasters, of course, the BP oil disaster in the Gulf, and now this growing nuclear crisis in Japan. All the while, Congress has put the brakes on legislation for clean energy legislation and money that might go towards renewable energy.
And is even talking about cutting the budgets for our science and safety agencies like NOAA and the Pacific Tsunami Warning Center.
I believe there's a long national discussion to come ahead, certainly concerning nuclear. Of course, we thought that would be the case concerning offshore drilling, and here we are already drilling offshore with very little change in policy. Meanwhile, I can't even imagine the hell that those 50 workers at Fukushima are currently staring into right now at this hour as they fight to keep those four reactors from completely melting down. This story is obviously moving very quickly, and we here at the Green News Report will stay on it. For much more, please see our website at greennews.bradblog.com. You can follow us 24/7 on Twitter at Green News Report, where we're trying to keep updated on this story. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at CityNet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Ten and a half minutes past the hour. Lines are open. You know the number, 877-443-2366. If you don't, you do now. 304-658-3333, the direct dial number. And we go straight away to the phone. All righty. Well, not straight away. I got to. There's some stuff I have to do there. Okay, got to make it all go away. Okay. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey. So I can't even believe that discussion is going on, or at least you know about the grand bargain, and the sort of adult discussion about cutting Social Security. I mean, the way they're putting it, you know, I question when...
Yeah, that Barack Obama's administration is divided into two camps, the camp that actually wants to win in 2012 and the camp that wants him to put cutting Social Security on the table?
Oh, yeah, with Geithner, you know, leading that camp. And the thing is that, to me, if that discussion is happening, it just means that it's much more pronounced than ever, and it's just a trial balloon. Now, we're supposed to take comfort in that the Axelrod side of his, the people who actually have to get him elected is saying, oh, listen, you can't do this.
Yeah, the gang that's come up with the new slogan you mentioned last night?
Yeah.
Change,
yeah, change that matters.
You weren't pulling my leg, were you?
I sure wasn't.
Change that matters.
Mm.
I guess it's better than change the adventure continues, huh?
I don't even know. I mean, they need to change that. That's a horrific slogan. But, you know, so we're supposed to, you know, we're just, I've been waiting for the other shoe to drop because I believe that this administration in some form or another is going to try to mount an attack on the entitlement, you know, and I say entitlement, and it's not a dirty word. It means what I'm saying it means.
Yeah, you are in, you have a legal and social and cultural entitlement.
Right.
Yeah. You have title. You are titled to it.
You know, and it's just like, the whole idea that the workers and the people who paid into it dutifully has to be the one to take the hit as opposed to the bond vigilantes and the people who buy T-bills. I mean, it makes me sick. It's just
Did you hear about, I forget the name of the company, but I was listening on the way down the road the other, last week, about this, one investment company that has decided it will no longer buy, United States bond debt.
No, I haven't heard about that one.
It was out in some group that's managed out of California, and they interviewed him on the radio, and he said, well, right now we just don't feel like 2% is an appropriate return on our investments, and we're getting out of American bonds.
Okay, well, once again, I wouldn't be surprised if any of this is just, you know, strategically placed bullshit to prepare us for them to finish off, you know, the entitlement programs. I really am thinking that this man who's president is presiding over, you know, the final destruction of the New Deal. I don't even know what else to think, because if he was concerned about the majority of the American people, he would be saying something about this sort of fascist takeover in Detroit, in Michigan. You see what I'm
yeah,
saying?
At least say
it's
something.
Don't even
have to put on the comfortable walking shoes, Barack. No, say something.
I mean, that one there is just beyond outrageous. I don't understand where the Tea Party is on this. I thought they wanted, you know, local control.
Yeah, and less government.
Local control?
What
the hell?
Yes, what the hell. But no, it just brings out the rampant hypocrisy of the teabaggers. You know, they were always just nasty little tools of the right wing. There was nothing grassroots about them. It's a con job. We know that.
I know. But did you know that man also wants to increase taxes on elderly and poor people too?
Yeah, he wants.
It's just like $1.4 billion in taxes are going to be extracted from the hide of poor, working poor, and the elderly, and businesses are going to get an 86% reduction in their tax load. I mean, wow.
When does the screaming start?
No, it's just like, hello? People in Detroit are reeling because, once again, you know, this is not what they thought they were going to get. And it's just like you talked about yesterday, how the voting, if it worked, you know, we wouldn't have it. And that's becoming so true. Because don't tell me, oh, well, people need to vote and elections have consequences. No, this isn't a consequence of an election in America. This is a straight up fascist power grab, you know?
Yeah, and by the way, if you want to just add to the list of the growing job that the cabinet secretary of Jesus Barack has to do, here's a blurb, just the first paragraph of a dumb little story from The Hill. The Obama administration and senior Republicans offered a fresh show of support for nuclear power Monday, even as the crisis involving Japanese reactors deepened.
Yeah, well, it's really deepened. I mean, I know you were saying that the thing that went down, but did you hear that there's another fire going on?
Yeah, a fourth one.
Right, and I'm just like, no, I mean, I don't understand. Okay, so what, they have to do a show of support because of their paymasters? I'm confused. Because who in their right mind, what politician in their right mind would come on saying, oh, we still believe in it in the face of this? This is the thing that kills me about the political class right now. It's like, dude, the whole world's falling up around you. I mean, don't they have any political survival instincts? I'm confused. You got to explain it to me.
I think it's lip service. It's a response to the phone call. You know, you are going to keep supporting nuclear power, aren't you, Barack? Oh, absolutely.
Now, he didn't come out. Who's came out and said that, though? It was...
It was the Nuclear Energy Institute's chief nuclear officer. We're going to learn the lessons from Japan, and even if these events could occur here, which are highly unlikely, we'll be even better prepared to deal with the kinds of things they're dealing with in Japan right now.
Oh, no, listen. I know I had briefly mentioned it yesterday about those spent... I mean, little did I know. My God. That is so scary.
Do you know where the spent rods were kept?
That's what I'm saying. I just was like...
In a pool on the roof.
God,
it's not... Right. It's not the Fukushima Hilton with the pool on the roof.
And did you know that they had recently replaced the reactor so that number 4 has even more material in there? It was in between being shifted, you know, being processed. So there's even more of this shit in the one that's burning now. I don't even know how to even approach the catastrophe that's going on, but that prime minister, he don't have the look of mopping up. That fool look ashen. He look fucked up, okay?
Yeah.
He don't look right.
I don't know how long it's been since ashen has been used on this program, Sandra.
Oh, no. That fool don't look right. And I'm just like, you know, these governments, they lie.
Well, I have to share with you real quickly a remark that I got in the email from our buddy Robert in Kitakyushu. And he said, just to add, Bob, this is like a whole series of Katrinas. But notice how orderly things are going here. The government is actually helping the people, not preventing help coming in. It is really striking, says Robert, that in that one thing, I would hate to be in America in a disaster like this one, because the right-wingers would be hoarding the food, where here everything is being rationed out and people are willing to wait in long, long lines. You just don't see that level of cooperation in the States.
Listen, I know I'm amazed by that in Japan, but I have to add that there is a rising level of panic in Tokyo, though.
Yeah, oh yeah.
People starting to freak out. I mean, you can only push people for so long, and with the sort of DNA memory that country has, you know, this must be, I don't even know. I don't even know what must be going on, because people talking about tweeting about how all those 50 people are heroic. Heroic, my ass, is a suicide mission.
Yeah. I can hear it. If you want to talk about right, it's the 300 at Thermopylae, and not with the post punk the Persian overlord. No. The real, you know, stand in the breach kind of heroism. It's the kind of heroism that defines the human race. It is. It's a suicide mission.
No, and it's just sort of, you know, I mean, it's fine to give them props, but you need to put it in perspective about what's going on. You have probably some of the most amazing minds, because the people who design that shit, they have to respond. But I'm sorry, that exposure, they have to be as good as dead. I made the mistake of listening to an interview with Helen Caldicott. It was like, oh, dear God. Because you don't mess around.
And yet, let me offer this to counterbalance, because what Robert said in that email a minute ago, I got the proof of it. Chinless Mitch McConnell.
Oh.
Appeared on one of the Sunday Babble shows. Darlene just sent me this link. She said, I call him Turtle Face, and I hate to insult turtles. But Chinless Mitch shows up on one of the Sunday talk shows and utters these, what will eventually, I fear, because again, Sandra, this is one of those moments of little whispers into the ear of the universe when you think the universe ain't listening. Mitch McConnell said this: I don't believe that making U.S. energy policy
based on something happening in another country is how we should make policy. And I don't think right after a major environmental catastrophe is a very good time to be making American domestic policy. Biden, yeah, you just want to make meaningless phoneme noises.
Well, no, you know what? He really needs to meet his maker. Oh, no, I am so... That fugly asshole, wow, unbelievable. He's a horror show.
I don't believe that making U.S. energy policy based on something happening in another country is how we should make policy. But we make all kinds of policy decisions based on things happening in other countries. It's just when it's not to Mitch McConnell's liking.
Well, and also, I'm sure Mitch McConnell has access to a private jet, and he can take his happy ass somewhere else when the radiation clouds come afloat.
Well, you know, but there's only one problem. I don't know of any private jets that'll get him to escape velocity, and he's going to run out of planet.
Well, no, this is how they think, though. I swear.
I'm with you. I'm with you. I want to see him do that final comeuppance scene from the first Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know, where his skin melts off of his bones and his eyeballs go blip right out of his head.
Yeah, no, these people are just despicable. And the thing is, it's really disturbing if you watch the TV for any amount of time here. You know, you got to have, a Web 2.0 device, your internet, to counter what the fuck you're being told, because it's so much lies. Because it's like, oh, this person works for that industry, so you can't take them at face value, but they never announce who the hell they work for. You know? And they're just spinning so much BS about this, you don't know if you're coming or going. But
no.
we're supposed to believe that this, what the French, I don't know what regulatory commission, has now labeled a 6 out of 7, the French, Bob, the French.
Yeah, the ones who are supposed to be so good at it.
Right. They said, oh, and if you're in Tokyo and you're French, you need to get the fuck out. Okay? And we got it here in America that everything's okay, and Obama, please issue that $4.6 billion in taxpayer guarantee to our industry.
Yeah, that was the one nice thing out of that story I was sharing with you a minute ago from The Hill about how one of the geniuses said, you know, given the teabaggers, I just don't see us getting those loan guarantees through Congress.
Well, you know what I'm saying? However, that's going to stop. But then poor people in Georgia, though, they still paying before they even cut ground on this. This is the thing that kills me about what goes on here. I forget what city in Georgia, but they, you know, are the recipient of this sort of wondrous form of energy. But their rates have gone up already in anticipation. I wish I remember what city.
Right. And
I don't know, but listen, what I really need, did you have a chance to look at that video at all?
No, I'd started the show, so I don't know what's in it.
Oh, listen, it's total comedy because about this dumbass bitch from UCLA. You know?
Oh, the one that goes off on
Asian people. Well, this is a comedian who responds to her, oh, dear God. It's the Asian comedian.
Okay, so the backstory is this idiotic woman at UCLA ranted about Asian people, right?
Yeah.
I'm that far. So we got a response here? Is that what you're telling me?
Yes.
Okay, so we got to roll with this. God knows we need a giggle.
Okay, because let me just tell you, okay, go ahead and roll it, because the one thing in here that had me over the edge, he said, bitch, you know what UCLA stands for? You see lots of Asians. Oh.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway.
Okay, here we go. It'll go in a minute, maybe. Oh, for pity's sakes. Let's reload it.
Oh, okay.
Food! No more groceries! That's food from our backyard! We don't know how to fend for ourselves.
Oh,
you
wait.
Know how to kill, slaughter...
Wait, back up. Okay.
So we know that I'm not the most politically correct person, so don't take this offensively. These hordes of Asian people that you...
Now, wait, don't you love that, Sandra?
Yeah, well...
Anytime a white person says, I'm not politically correct, that means that they're about to cut loose with some serious, serious bigotry.
Right, like the tuna who said, no disrespect, you know, that coach from Dallas. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, okay, let's check her out. This ought to be good.
UCLA accepts into our school every single year, which is fine. But if you're going to come to UCLA, then use American manners.
What the f***? YouTube, usually I don't do these type of vlogs. I usually don't do videos about other people's lives and videos. I usually do it about my own life. But this right here, this one's a doozy. For those of you who haven't seen this video, it's basically, as you can tell by the earlier clips, ranting about why she hates Asian people. Man, you must be out your motherfucker. You know what? I'm not mad. Because some of that shit is true. But the problem was, she said it out loud, and that's what we got problem.
You will always see old Asian people running around this apartment complex every weekend. That's what they do. They don't teach their kids to fend for themselves.
What's that? We don't know how to fend for ourselves? Are you kidding me right now? Apparently, you've never been to Asia. What, you think you've grown up because you go to a grocery store and you get some groceries? Bitch, we grow our food. Those aren't groceries. That's food from our backyard. We don't know how to fend for ourselves. Do you know how to kill, slaughter a cow in 10 seconds and put it back on a plate? Huh? You don't know how to do anything? There's a reason why you outsource your jobs to people in Asia. That's why we counterfeit all your shit. Your car could break down in the middle of a road. We could take it apart and make it into an airplane. That's how great Asian people are.
Everybody that they know that they brought along from Asia with them comes here on the weekends to do their laundry, buy their groceries, and cook their food for the week.
And so what if we bring all of our family members to the dorms, huh? Don't be mad because nobody loves you, bitch. You can tell how upset I am just by how many chins come out when I'm angry. See that? 7 chins. That's as high as it goes. How are you going to put up a video that you hate Asian people and you go to UCLA? Do you know what UCLA stands for? You see a lot of Asians. I'm ever assassinated. Just kidding, don't sue. And it's going to be in the weirdest way possible, okay? I'm going to hire a white person to dress up as a ninja to kill you with a samurai sword, huh?
Hi. In America, we do not talk on our cell phones in the library. Every 5 minutes, I will be, okay, not 5 minutes, say like 15 minutes. I'll be like deep into my studying, into my political science theories and argument, and all of a sudden when I'm about to like reach an epiphany, over here from somewhere, oh, Jin Chong Bing Long Tin Tong.
Oh my god, and the way Asian people talk on their phone? What about the way we talk on our phone? We're not even talking loud. That's just how we speak in our language. You going to imitate Asian people? Guess what? I'm going to imitate a white person.
Hi, I'm from England. Here's a blanket for smallpox. Oh, no, what was that? No smallpox. Just kidding. Yeah, you'll be fine.
No, you know what even pisses me off even more? She talks about the tsunami. The tsunami, right after she imitates a Chinese person. We're not even the same people. It's two different people.
It's not the same thing.
I'm not mad at you, girl, because Asian people are racist, too. But we have enough common sense not to just put it out on video. Asian people were secretively racist. Like, we'll walk up to you, and then we'll talk shit about you in our language, so you don't understand.
So being the polite, nice American...
Polite American? Are you kidding me? Polite American? Polite and American doesn't even go in one sentence. You know how I know? Because I'm an American. I'm not polite. And it's not because I'm Asian. It's because I grew up here. We're not polite. How do I know this? You don't even take off your shoes when you walk into my house. I usually don't hate people that I don't meet. But I hate your guts, girl. Let me ask you something. What are you good at? Huh? You kind of look like a slut. You're probably good at something like this, huh? Is that a wig? Oh, this is a wig. It's okay, girl. You upset. So am I. This is a little creepy. I'm not telling you people out there that you have to do anything per se or specifically to hurt her. Don't go around attacking this woman, on my name. Just do it because you want to. I'm kidding. Halfway.
Jesus God Almighty.
Listen, I was just like, what could I say? I thought that was really funny and, you know, some sort of little response because it was not crazy what that woman was saying.
Yeah, well, my God, with this going on, and she,
that's the thing. That's what was
and
so
Barbie decides to do that. You know, nothing to see here. These are not the glowing human units you're looking for. Jesus criminy.
Well, but the funniest thing in that video is when he did his impression of a white person. I was like, damn.
Oh, here is a blanket.
I'll go there.
Well, why not?
I was great. It was just so over the top, the whole thing. But no, it's just incredible that, I mean, how stupid. It was embarrassing. I mean, I was embarrassed for that girl. I thought, wow, really?
And, well, and she's such a Barbie.
Well, no, it was just like, no, you are a stereotype. You see what I'm saying?
I
was
I mean, I kept expecting to see little dots of white out appear on the screen, you know?
No, you did not.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, my God. Thank God for this web-based radio show is all I got to say about that.
Jeez. Oh, God. But, you know, it's... I mean, it's all over. You know, Gilbert Gottfried will no longer be the voice of the Aflac duck.
Oh, what did he do? I saw that guy, and I'm like...
Oh, he tweeted about 12 rapid-fire one-liners about the disaster in Japan. You know, because it's funny, right? Yeah, and then Aflac looks up, and Aflac, by the way, who does about 80% of its global business in Japan.
I don't mean to laugh, but it's like, yeah, sure, they got rid of him.
Goodbye, Gilbert.
Oh, shit. I just saw that story. I just saw his picture.
Right, and immediately went into complete damage control, a complete image control mode, and said, you know what, we didn't just fire Gilbert Gottfried. I just got done signing a $100 million check for tsunami earthquake radiation relief. Yeah, that's how bad Aflac realized that Gilbert Gottfried had done them. They donated $100 million.
Wow.
Yeah, not a million. No.
$100 million.
But here's the kicker. Here's the kicker. I had Haley Barbour a few minutes ago, Sandra.
Yeah.
You know.
What about his aide? Have you heard about him?
There, yes.
Okay.
His aide. It was his communications director.
Yeah, I didn't know what idiot it was. I was just
Fell on his sword after tweeting a bunch of "let's make fun of the radiated Japanese people" jokes. Haley Barbour. This is something I just hate about our political system. Nobody has to own it except the guy who did it. But these Republicans create a culture and an atmosphere in which it's okay, in which they say things like Barbie did there about, everybody knows I'm not politically correct, you know, so I'm going to say this, like, stupid, racist, hateful, bigoted, prejudiced thing. And then does. And it's the same thing as Haley Barbour saying, well, by God, he sounds like a new convert to the just heard the gospel for the first time. Oh.
I mean, they never miss an opportunity to do that dog whistle, huh?
They love that is the dog whistle.
I mean, it's just so, I'm just like, oh my God, you know, it really is sort of ongoing with that.
David in South Carolina just dropped me a note, and he says, last week or two I've been working overtime on some writing projects and getting a little sleep, and when I do sleep, it's at odd times for a few hours. So anyway, somewhere in this haze, I clicked on the TV and went through the channels a bit. The same thing happened to me this morning. I went from the new Ginsu, which is now called the Showtime Knife. I'm so ashamed that I even know. And landed...
Wait, I'm sorry. I know, I'll let you... You need to finish that story, but the what? They changed the name?
Yeah, it's now the Showtime Knife, and they show it. They're still cutting up hammers and sawing through pineapples, and for three low payments of only $13.33 a month. And why is that on a brain cell that I own, Sandra? What is wrong? Oh, what's happening to me?
Oh, no.
So I click over, and the same thing happened to me that happened to David in South Carolina. We land on Morning Joe. And there's Pat Buchanan with the same style of Brooks Brothers Oxfords that he's been buying since before the Reichstag fire. And you know, the Joe and
Mika and Mika's brother and whoever the rest of those the little minion bastards are on that show. And they're all sitting there chuckling and chortling, as David notes. He says about how this nuclear disaster is not as bad as it seems, and all we have to do is put the backup generators up about five stories above the ground. And all the panelists, led by Pat Buchanan, thought this was a valid solution and nodded their heads off, and I cut it off, says David. It's about where I lost my my temper as well.
Oh, no. God. I mean, yeah, it's just...
There's something wrong in America. There's something badly wrong because... You know who the only person is who hasn't said something stupid about the tsunami? Charlie Sheen. Because 50 Cent got busted, stone busted, for stuff he was saying about the tsunami.
No, but he is a complete idiot. That's the dude who's like, oh, well, you know, he's a Bush supporter. You know, he was.
Oh,
I mean, the guy is such an idiot.
Where's Toby Keith when I need him?
Oh, God. No, I have avoided the cable.
No, Toby Keith is vibrating. He just wants to say, I don't know, he'll make a new video animated by the guys at Jib Jab about putting a boot in. Booting a nuclear reactor core or something. God. And then the Reverbo just chimed in, Sandra. The well-mannered American. You've struck a nerve. Fat, sloppy, and ignorant. The dumbed-down new American slob. Bad look, bad talk, bad think. Yeah, we're really ready to lecture the rest of the world in international etiquette, huh? I don't know about the rest of the herd, but I remain nostalgic for the trim, tailored, and educated 60s. Okay, I'm a snob, but for the right things, and proud of it, says Referbo.
Hilarious. No, I mean, that girl, I mean, you know, it really just challenges the whole UC system. It's like, how in the hell, bitch, did you get in? All sorts of things went through my mind.
Oh, and, you know, not that I wanted to wear a burqa or anything, but, I mean, come on. The little tank top was, what, 8 sizes too small?
Not only that, but...
I mean, the girls were out there.
Pearl necklace much? I'll go there. That's exactly what that bitch looked like.
You know, I'm just so proud of you because every time I dig a hole, you're down there with a shovel, too.
Right.
Let's go deeper, Bob!
Big shovel because... She just straight up looked like I am a hoe, okay? And it's just like, girl, get off. I'm sure there's like hundreds of responses to that, you know?
Oh, and yeah, and probably a good 50% of them are saying, you know, you go, girl, you got it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, you know, and I hate to go misogynist, you know what I mean? But I just looked at her and thought, oh, no, girl. First of all, put a shirt on. What's up? You know?
How to dress for your embarrassing YouTube video.
And I realize this is way far from... But I just can't even wrap my head around, you know, some of the things going on in the world. So
no, we're just... No, we are that dim. We are that insensitive. You know, I got mad at myself for allowing the Blue Oyster Cult's Godzilla to enter my consciousness. You know, I mean, I just... Bob, shame on you.
No, listen. Oh, no. I mean, unfortunately, I've been following, you know, a couple of tweet threads, and, yeah, you know how stupid that has to be, right?
Oh.
It's just...
And then, you know, this. I am, after all, the guy who walks around all day March the 15th ruminating on the murder of Caesar, okay? I'm just that geeky. So, no, I had that moment of Blue Oyster Cult pop into the MP3 player that is my brain, and I went, wait a minute. Holy crap! And I started a little personal meditation on the fact that the whole Godzilla thing, phenomenon, is nothing more than an existential rumination by Japanese film. You know, Godzilla is the stand-in for nuclear holocaust.
Yeah, no, I thought it had some sort of relations to that. You know, that ultimately.
Well, I mean, there's overt stuff within the storyline, but, you know, this is the late 50s, early 60s, recovering from having been nuked by the United States with nuclear power finally coming online.
Well, and it's a monster, so, no, definitely. I certainly can appreciate that. Well, anyway, listen. You know,
yeah, a question here coming in. Ask Sandra. With regard to Barbie's look, does Pigeon or Hoochie Mama enter that discussion?
It's not, you know, it's, she can't even, it's not even, it's not even that appealing. I don't even, like I said, all I thought about was what we just said before with that one and different places where Johnsons can go. That's all that came to my mind.
Cue up the ZZ Top.
Oh, my God. And so that's how she was coming across, you know, to me. Because I'm quite crass, so maybe other chicks have different looks when they pop up on YouTube. But she really needs to maybe go to the San Fernando Valley. That's where the big industry is. She might want to migrate over a bit.
Oh, God.
Anyway, and on that note, I'll say goodnight.
Wait. Can't let you go yet. We have the official response. We have the official response of the Chancellor of UCLA.
Yes, let's hear. That motherfucker getting paid enough, so what is he saying?
Yeah. And by the way, Marty just sent this in, and he says, according to my friend who is incidentally Asian, this woman that we were referring to as Barbie, whom he refers to as Carrie Pre-Gene 1.1.
Oh, God, yes.
Happens to be a model. Just happens to be. Oh, we don't just have a statement. The Chancellor of UCLA now does video.
Okay, listen. He's information literate.
Here we go.
Okay.
Maybe. Come on. It's got damn it. Okay, well, I'm having problems tonight, Sam. To the campus community. Wait, he's talking again.
Tory and stereotypical remarks toward a particular ethnic group has roiled our campus and caused a lot of pain. This has been a sad day for UCLA and a disappointing one for me personally. The student in the video referred to, quote, our school. The UCLA described in the video is not the university I know. The students, staff, and faculty that I speak with every day take pride in having one of the most diverse campuses in the nation. Our campus reflects the many communities of California and our world, and this greatly enriches the UCLA academic experience. I've heard from many people that they are offended and outraged over the comments that were made. Regardless of how offended I am, or you may be by this video, I hope that we can remain civil in our discourse. As scholars and members of a campus community, we have a responsibility to honor and respect one another.
Nothing to see here. Move along.
Too late, bitch. I'm like, huh?
Yeah, well, we took care of that whole civility thing real quick, didn't we, Sandra?
It's too late. You know, if she gonna step up like that, the chancellor's speech ain't gonna help. I'm sure there's hella folks like, oh, no, she better wash her ass, okay? That's for sure. She's going to stroll out her dorm and do what?
Well, and what do you want to bet that civility part was in response to the guy that we just played a few minutes ago?
Oh, that video is so funny because he has little messages flashing like, yeah, you know, go do this to her and that. Very entertaining. I don't know, you know. I like how people can sort of hurry up and, you know, because that needed a response. It was just like...
Yeah, just like David in Tennessee, I'm itching to know how or why she got into UCLA. I mean, well, there are some standards there, right?
Oh, no. Listen, that school is... that's a decent school. I mean, I was looking at their international relations department, you know, for a master's. It's quite good, you know.
I mean, I have a very dear friend who graduated out there with a degree, and I said, Jesus, it's like upper level cognitive, and you know, she kind of clued me in on the stuff she was studying. And I was like, wow, they never told me none of that at Harvard on the Mon at WVU.
No, listen, they got a great public policy, you know, a wonderful information science school, you know, good. Yeah, it's a really good, huge campus, you know, comparable to Berkeley, but down south. And
yep.
It's just sort of ideal, but of course, and it's pretty rigorous to get in. But I think there's, you know, maybe she's a legacy. I mean, who knows?
Stunning. Just
anyway,
there are these moments, and you know I have them. I was just awash in them over the last several days.
you know, looking out over that flat expanse of Mississippi River bottom land, going, you know, how would you, you know, just mind boggled, and white people. Yeah. And I looked up at the group one day, and because I was, oh, Sandra, I was learning all this, you know, I learned about eyeball rape, you know, and that blew me away. And then I learned another phrase called exaggerated presence. You know, all the white people all the time running around going, why is that fellow wearing his pants halfway down his bottom?
Oh, right.
And it was explained to me very patiently that the reason this happens is because persons of color have been so overtly ignored for so long in this country that the way you get noticed is to be exaggeratedly present. And that's what that is. The bling, the hats on backwards, the pants pulled down, all of that stuff is a way of saying, I'm here, damn it. If I was dressed in a Brooks Brothers suit with a button-down Oxford, I'd still be invisible.
Well, yeah, it all goes back to that they all look alike syndrome. You see what I mean? With white folks and the way they view black people.
And the line that I heard when it was explained that the Queen of England at least was or still is a major shareholder in a plantation called Southern Pinelands in Mississippi. One of the women sitting at my table just looked around and said, well, I reckon we know now why Barack and Michelle ain't got invited to the wedding.
Stop.
And I about come out of my chair.
Speaking of that,
sideways, you know, just fell over.
No, that's a good one. Speaking of that wedding, I was talking to my friend, from England today, and she was like, shit, you know, they get the day off. I'm like, what?
Well, did you see that they're using off. Did you see that they're using convict labor to do the cleanup?
Oh no, I didn't hear that.
No. The richest single family on earth, at least the richest white family, you know, the House of Windsor, instead of ponying up and paying for their own wedding, they're using state funds. And in order to keep the budget down, they're using convict labor to pretty up the places that otherwise wouldn't be so nice, that are going to have to be traversed by all the tourists to the wedding.
Oh, no. That's unbelievable. Wow. I mean, you know, my friend was saying about those royals, the new ones, she said, well, you know, well, they kind of looked all right when they started out, but then she said they have succumbed to the rest of the family and they're hella ugly. And I was just dying, because my friend is like from, you know, she's...
Right, and they're especially fetching when they go to the Halloween costume ball in their Nazi costumes.
Exactly. She's working, you know, she's straight up working class. She hates, you know, she despises the whole royalty thing, but like she said, it's a day off.
At least somebody getting some relief. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Anyway, listen, this is like, just, oh, my God, this conversation is really gone.
Yeah, I know. And just to finish it up, Marty updating. Third-year political science student Alexandra Wallace. Oh, wait, stop. No, her name is not Wallace, but it is.
It's Wallace, and also, yeah, she's a political. I also noted that, too. I thought, oh, no. You know,
and lo and behold, there have been death threats and violent responses criticized as equally damaging.
Equally?
Yeah, equally.
Well, agents weren't up there talking about crackers on the phone, though, were they?
No.
You know, everything is good. Both sides do it. Are we back to that?
Yeah, somebody call John Stewart.
Listen, anyway, of course. In America, I mean, this country is so jacked up sometimes, but it is entertainment value, high entertainment value.
Well, and you know what? We need a giggle somewhere along the way in the midst of all of this.
Definitely. And listen, on that, really.
Yeah, I know.
I hope your show can get a bit more elevated after this.
I'm kind of enjoying a lot of the view from down here.
Oh, my God. All right, Bob. Have a good evening.
See you, Sandra. Bye now.
Bye.
Let's see. Detail update from Ron and Raleigh. Gojira, Godzilla, was produced in 1954. The American version with Raymond Burr was made in 1957 with added footage. It was the answer to 1950s insect fear films made in the beginning with them and the beginning of the end and so forth. But they all have a common theme of the hell on earth that's released, that's unleashed as a result of our having opened the nuclear genie bottle. And of course, and here's David in South Carolina, who made the obvious, well, not obvious, but yeah, the same thing occurred to me with our blonde friend Miss Wallace from the University of from UC. Lots of Asians. Miss Dumb Teen South Carolina comes to mind. Remember the one? Yeah, U.S. Americans who don't have any mops. Yeah, that one. That clip sounds like the Miss Teen America contestant from South Carolina. Well, I just love the fact that her last name is Wallace. Really, Wallace. And I'm not thinking of William Wallace. I'm thinking of George C. Gotta be a family connection there somewhere. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Bob. How you doing?
Robert.
Over here.
How are you?
I'm doing okay.
I was hoping we would hear from you.
Well, then, yeah, I tried calling yesterday, but, you know, it's getting off to work and everything. It's about almost 9 o'clock here, so I had to get all the kids off to school. So.
Well, what's the news from on the ground there in Kitakyushu? I mean, you from what you've written, it sounds like you're in the last most normal place in the entire nation.
Oh, it's almost beyond normal. It's almost surreal. It's like completely unaffected. I mean, my secretary was telling me that when the tidal wave hit Moji, which, you know, I'm on the southernmost island on the west side, the tidal wave was only 60 centimeters. So. And then when I saw the alert, the only region that was not affected by any of the tremors, because we're in the only place in Japan that has no fault lines, it was our area and then up along the west side of Yamaguchi, or the southernmost side of Honshu. So, yeah, we were pretty lucky. I mean, you know, pretty much missed a hail of bullets, basically.
What happens if things go sideways in a hurry, like in a place like Tokyo, and people start looking for somewhere to go?
Yeah, I was mentioning that in the chat room, because, I mean, how do you evacuate 10 million people? I mean, it's like evacuating New York City. And then evacuate them to where, you know?
Right, because you run out of where in a real hurry, don't you?
Yeah, exactly.
Go ahead.
I was expecting to see some refugees coming down this way, but that hasn't been happening. I've been noticing the Japanese news that there have been a lot of supplies and trucks going up to that area, but I haven't heard any mention about moving refugees down here or relocating them anywhere, because you get a whole bunch. I mean, just tens of thousands of people that are, you know, homeless, and they're going to be homeless for a long time. I mean, the comment of them rebuilding those cities, I don't ever see that actually happening, because you got so many of these. I mean, the homes have been wiped out, so it's like the family's been wiped out, so who owns the land? You might have second cousins or third cousins that may want to get into it. So there'd be endless property disputes, even once they can sort that out. And then who would want to buy the land and build there again? Especially, you know, with Japan, there's so much of a ghost thing, so it's hard to
Yeah, they pay attention to the idea of the spirits inhabiting places.
Yeah. I mean, it gets so insane that some apartment owners will actually charge $3,000, $4,000 to someone in which a family member had died in that apartment for damage. I mean, that's how crazy it gets.
Let's see. Marty wants to know, he says, which prefecture are you in? And a friend of his is in Gifu.
Oh, Gifu. So I was just talking to my colleague who was whose family is in Gifu, which is between Nagano and Tokyo. And that they had an earthquake, but it wasn't so bad. She was telling me all about that. I'm over in Fukuoka Prefecture, which is you know, the first prefecture that you get into when you get into Kyushu. So, I mean, nothing ever bad happens. So we have a volcano down south from here, but nothing.
And well, hasn't that been acting up or something?
Yeah, it's been acting up. I mean, maybe about 6 weeks, two months ago, it started kicking up, and actually, you know, people had to start wearing helmets and stuff. But that was about the worst of it.
Well, help me out here a little bit, Robert, if you don't mind. After the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, how long was it before people began living there again, from a radiation standpoint?
I remember the Japanese government, because I was reading, you know, because I went to the museum, and they had the trolley lines up and going after about 2 days. And they were bragging about that, you know. You can bomb us to smooth the rains, and we'll still come back. Now, I wasn't necessarily all the way into the city, but they had parts of it going back in.
Well, and in terms of radiation,
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how the radiation thing worked out, because it was always my impression that once you nuked a city, it was pretty much uninhabitable for a very long time. But
the question is, up there at Fukushima Daiichi, if everything does get bad, how much of that land is rendered, you know, unsuitable, unfit? What does it do to the infrastructure? And I guess one silly question, Robert, is there any sort of a movement in Japan towards sustainable energy sources? You know, not nuclear, not coal, not oil, not gas, wind, solar, geothermal.
Sony's got a huge complex over in southern part of Honshu somewhere. That's been in the TV a lot. So. But it's kind of like, you know, the same situation everywhere. They're fighting an uphill battle, you know, with a nuclear industry, which, I mean, has been lying through its teeth from day one. I've put some of the information in my own textbooks, even with, you know, students, and to develop critical thinking. And, I mean, it's the same old thing where, you know, it's like the military-industrial complex in the United States. I mean, there's so much, you know, they're in bed with each other so much, but you know, the good side about this is that they're going to take a second hard look, and I don't even see any more nuclear power plants being built for a very long time in Japan.
And the Germans have taken some of theirs offline. The Swiss are rethinking their stance on nuclear power. But meanwhile, in this country, the Republicans run out lickety-split. Oh, you know, I think it'd be a mistake to base up energy policy decisions on things that happen in other countries.
That's because they're not.
We're buying stupid by the barrel now, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean they're not living next to one. I mean, I was in Fukui Ken, which is about 2 hours north of Kyoto, and it was one of the poorest prefectures there. Awful place to live, mainly because of the rain. But they had 11 nuclear power plants in that one prefecture. 11. So.
And I mean, were they all put there because, I mean, is it another case of they don't build nuke plants next to Rockefeller mansions?
Right. I mean, you don't see them being built in Tokyo, do you? It's outside or far away. So. But I guess in Tokyo's situation, not far away enough. So.
Well, pursuant to the note you dropped me last night, are people still being reasonable and as relatively calm as they appear to be? And moreover,
it's not the nature of Japaneseness to necessarily panic. I mean, I noticed I woke up, you know, and there Jack Cafferty had this thing: why is there no looting in Japan? Yeah, routine. And he was going through the emails that he had sorted, and it was kind of, well, the Japanese people are, you know, just better and blah, blah, blah. And they were completely missing the point of why there was no looting in Japan. And it comes down to not that they're a better people or they're racially superior. None of that ever exists. It comes down to one thing, which is moral education and what they do in the elementary schools and junior high schools and high schools. And that's a moral education without any religion whatsoever.
Well, I was about to say, how can you have a moral education without Jesus?
Well, no, it's done. It's done, and it's done so extremely well, Bob, that it blows my mind. To give an example, I'm at the Green Park over in Wakamatsu Ward, and it's a huge amusement park with kangaroo. It had like a kangaroo park where you go and meet the kangaroos and touch them and pet them. And we found, as we were leaving, this small game microchip thing in the gravel. And I said, oh, finders keepers. And my son said, oh, no, that's not ours. We must return it. And it gets down to the point of lost, you know, pencils that are left in the classroom, that's not mine, or umbrellas, that's not mine. So the honesty goes far beyond anything I've seen. You can go down to any city at night, never be mugged. Don't worry about being raped. That concept of being, you know, fear of a crime, you just, as you enter the airport in Japan, you just put that in the trash can. You don't have to worry about that. And it's not because they're racially better, pure. It's just because of that one thing, you know, moral education.
And there's I'm sorry.
Yeah, there's a real agnostic tint to this. I mean, because it's done without any kind of reference to God whatsoever. I mean, the kids actually become almost agnostic. There was the one engineer student that I'm teaching. I'm teaching at a university that teaches engineers to be engineers. And I was teaching this Egyptian doctoral student who was actually doing wind turbines, strangely enough. And he was telling about his own son, because he was Muslim, right? And he sent his son back to Egypt because he was finishing up, and how the son was really raising hell back in Egypt because he had become agnostic. And he was telling his fellow students, the father's relating this all to me, kind of laughing, which is more important, God or your father? And the little fellow Islamic, you know, students go kind of crazy. Says, when was the last time you saw God give you your dinner? When was the last time you saw God pay the rent or put a house over a roof over your head?
Wow.
And, you know, you never saw God doing that. So, yeah, so the kids come out quite agnostic, but at the same time, incredibly honest and pure.
Well, is... Go ahead.
Okay, let me explain how this, works in the Philippines. So my wife is Filipino, right? And so she's getting all this crap about how the tsunami has been God's condemnation on Japan. And they're using the word karma, like, you know, what are you, Hindus or Christians? And the Filipinos are not really in a position to start the karma routine because they just had a huge tsunami, super typhoon, and flooded Manila for more than, vacation. In the end of December, just to get out. And to show how strange life is with the Catholic Church in charge and religion everywhere, a religion that allows you to be forgiven for any crime or sin that you commit, what happens is that people end up not taking responsibility for their own actions and, repeating their sins and, every day, every hour. So the Philippines is kind of a cockfighting culture. It's even on the TV. And as I'm leaving the Palawan airport, and Palawan is a beautiful place. It's the last frontier. We're going out the airport, and under the security guard's desk, I hear a cockle-doodle-doo. And that's where he had put his prize fighter. Because if he had left his prize fighter at home, his neighbor would have stolen it. And it would not have been a problem because then the neighbor would go to church and, please forgive me, God. Oh, okay, you did. Thank you. And the wife can stay home, of course, but the cockfighter is coming and it's going to be in a safe place. Where can I put it? It's under the desk.
Oh, my God. And then it...
I flipped out. I laughed. I laughed for 10 minutes when I got into that airport. You put the damn chicken cockfighter in the slipping desk. So...
That's sort of like the logical extension of when Sharon Engel in Nevada said, take a chicken to the doctor. He carried his fighting cock to the airport.
Yeah, right. Airport and stuck it in, under the desk where it would be safe and wouldn't be stolen. Here I can leave. One time I was in Chofu, which is a samurai town over right across the straits, and I had left my car window unlocked, down, and my camera inside, and my wife, who's Philippine American, said, "Boy, if this had been the Philippines, your camera would be gone and the car would be gone, and it wouldn't be a problem because they just go to church and say, 'Please forgive me for my sins,' and it's all okay." So, but here you're forced to take to be responsible and take responsibility for your actions and the moral education. It can be done. And it's because I'm seeing it every every time. I've been here 17 years and never been robbed and never been insulted and never been, anything.
And it becomes part of your own sort of the worldview. I mean, even you as an expat, right?
Right, of course. So, the only time I've actually seen nastiness. I mean, you remember this story I told you a couple of years ago when I was actually in the church and there was a homeless man there was outside the parking lot starving and I was giving him some noodles and I was getting nothing but shit from the old ladies in the church. Don't feed him, don't feed him. That's where the nastiness comes in. So.
But will that attitude, well, and those were Christians, of course.
Those were Christians, yeah, right, yeah. Where you get the nastiness is the Christians and maybe the wealthy people, I mean, even Ishihara, who was the governor of Tokyo, did the same crap that Glenn Beck did, because Glenn Beck was going off with, it's God's punishment crap. And Ishihara's own, another right-winger, and, stupider than a bag of beans. And he opened his mouth. I mean, this is in the Mainichi Daily News and also the Japan Times. And it was God's punishment that tsunami hit because they were greedy people.
Because they were greedy.
Greedy. And I just, greedy, I don't see greedy in the Japanese, at least the workers, I see greedy in your sorry ass, Ishihara, and the politicians.
Yeah, because the Japanese working class works itself to death, doesn't it?
Yes.
I mean, literally.
A day, 14 hours a day, 16 hours a day, 30,000, 32,000 now, suicides, one every 15 minutes. Because there's no sense of quitting, looking for a better job because it's the same thing, right?
Yeah,
each other job. So you're just going from frying pan to fire. So.
Well, I mean, are there real? I can't imagine that there aren't. There are real issues relating. You mentioned the homeless man. There are real issues relating to hunger, and it's not high summer as Desi Doyen noted a little bit ago. Snow is falling up in Fukushima.
Yeah, it was quite a nice that weekend, and. I heard, lots of, because I was glued to the news, I just couldn't stop watching it. On another note, with CNN News, it was interesting because I'm looking at the two different channels, and CNN, what they're doing is simply taking the day-old reports that I've watched already and just putting it on the news.
No actual reporting, no journalism.
No actual reporting, yeah, just, just copying stuff And I've noticed that, it's almost like 2 minutes of news with CNN and then it's commercial time. It's almost two and a half minutes and it's commercials, endless commercials. So they're making a lot of money off this disaster. Whereas the Japanese news, you can go 10, 12 minutes before you hit a commercial, if that. But it was kind of heartbreaking in the sense because you're watching, I was watching just an endless series of the interviews of people that had lived through that. It was really heartbreaking. I mean, one was a young 17-year-old girl that was looking for her mother and father who had just went out for a walk.
Oh.
And she couldn't find them. And she had lost her house. She had lost everything. Another was the grandmother was looking for her daughter, her baby, gone. So... And this was, I was 60, 70 of these interviews, and you don't get that necessarily so much on CNN, but it was just unbelievable. If your callers want to see some photos, it'll be the Mainichi Daily. I think I sent that link to you, the Mainichi Daily News Photo Gallery. And it's just, they have a whole bunch of photos there that just, it's mind blowing. So, in my city of 1 million people, there's only 3 other people that are probably in a safer position than I am. Because I'm up on I have a house up on the mountain, the highest mountain. And I'm right next to where the cable car starts. And so, I was actually up there, but my children, one was at school, one was out of school because it was graduation day that day. And so when I heard the sirens go off, I thought, oh, must be a heck of a fire. It wasn't until I was inviting my neighbor over for a barbecue for the next day that that she told me about all this. So.
So it's just the word was a little slow getting around.
Well, I mean, we were so high up that I couldn't hear any messages about it. I just heard the sirens going off, but, you know, sirens, you know. And then you hear the word tsunami, you don't take it seriously because for the past 17 years it's been 10 centimeters, 5 centimeters, you know.
And by the way, with regard to the religious angle on all of this, Ron in Raleigh just offered a very telling thought. He said, think about it, the most religious place in America are its prisons. So that's sort of the counterpoint to that agnosticism that you were discussing a couple of minutes ago.
Right. Basically, I mean, it's a situation where, I mean, you have a crazy religion where you have a scapegoat religion where you're just, you know, all your sins are put on someone else and you don't have to take responsibility for it. So you don't. And then there's the idea, well, we're all sinners, and so you're going to continue sinning, so don't worry about it. Just keep asking forgiveness for sins. And so you're going to set up a situation where no one takes responsibility. So.
Well,
and this is not to say that the Japanese don't believe in the afterlife. They do. I mean, the ghost thing is quite prevalent, but they don't obsess about it too much. I mean,
well, but they're also actively, it sounds to me like they're actively engaged in not screwing up their afterlife.
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, doing it right and just, you know, being honorable and just, you know, because it's just a lot easier. Yeah, you know, you don't have all this, to use the Hindu word, bad karma having to you. So, but no, I mean, with these, I mean, when I was listening to the news, I just, you know, I'm looking at the devastation. It's going to be months before they get more bodies pulled out. You know, it's just really mind-blowing. It's just, I just don't know what to say. And I mean, this is going to be two or three times the cost of the Hanshin earthquake, which I've kind of lived through in a way, even though it was in Hiroshima. That was $140 billion. So this would be a lot more, I think.
And you know, the question, and this, you alluded to this in your first email, how long will it be before some right-wing profiteer starts talking about how to make a bundle off of the horror?
And yet,
I noted somewhere that I guess gold and precious metals fell a little bit instead of climbed. I hate these because you're hearing things, we're hearing things over here at least, well, what will this do to the global economy? Will this tank the global economy? You know, God almighty, Robert, people are lost, people are homeless, 10,000 people are missing or dead, and some guy in a suit with a nice dent in his necktie is sitting in a skyscraper on Wall Street wondering about whether or not it's going to impact his ability to bring home a $1.5 million bonus next Christmas? I mean, that's one of those signs of the apocalypse. That's one of those proofs of a dead culture.
Well, yeah, dead soul. I mean, there's nothing there. I mean, you're so cut off from reality that, you know, you're not really living anymore. So I mean, even the Japanese baseball players, I noticed on the news, you know, they're out collecting, you know, funds and monies and stuff for the victims. But you haven't seen the Japanese royal family, not a peep, not a
that
peep.
Was, yeah, that was, where's the emperor? Are we back to where the emperor can't be
heard, can't be bothered by this. Not a word. I haven't seen nothing on any television channel.
Well, does anybody expect to hear from them?
Well, yeah, you think there would have been. Yeah, there.
But I mean, you know, you're
think about it until today.
You're an American, but I mean, the people who are, you know, who have grown up in, you know, total immersion in the culture, the same culture that raises up that sort of moral society. Do they expect the emperor to sort of get in a helicopter or fly over, or the you know, would they be as offended as we were when we found out that George Bush couldn't make a G chord, but that he was trying to play guitar while New Orleans drowned?
I think that's going to come in maybe after a few more weeks when they start finishing up the first round of, you know, pulling out bodies, and then they're going to, then they're, that's going to be noticed, I think. But I mean, to tell you, to give you a quick view of how crazy this royal family is, or any royal family for that matter, a few months ago, maybe it was 6 months ago, there was a thing in which the daughter, the granddaughter, I should say, missed school for a couple of days. And she missed school because she was traumatized, Bob. You know why she was traumatized?
Oh, no.
Because as she was leaving school, a couple of boys ran past her. And she thought that was just, that was way beyond the pale.
Unbearable.
Unbearable. And so that was called, it was a form of bullying. You know, it's school's over, you know, boys run out, right? And she missed school, and there was a national debate about that for 2 days. And it took a couple more days to get her back into school.
What was the nature of the debate? I mean, that little boys
running past her a form of bullying. And what's going to be done about this?
Golly Moses.
Kind of makes your head spin, don't it?
I mean, were they supposed to stop and bow and prostrate themselves and kiss the earth? I mean,
something, or walk slowly like a robot. I mean, but that's, you know, the mentality already of we're talking about an 8-year-old, 9-year-old, 10-year-old, maybe 10. That's how messed up she is already. Something about the money that does something, just makes the person lose their soul or the mind or something, because it's the royal family or it's the Wall Streeters, and it's the same crap. And then they find it funny. You know, you mentioned the off-flack comedian and all these other assholes that just, they find it amusing. And I mean, when you're actually reading the case, you just, oh, I mean, it was just a series of epitaphs, and oh my God, for me when I was watching this.
I can't. There's no place inside my being, Robert, where I can go and say, oh, well, okay, under that circumstance, I would make a joke about it.
You could. I mean, yeah, same here.
It doesn't exist for me.
There's no way to spin that. No. So.
And yet, you know, and it's not just Gilbert Gottfried, and it's not just 50 Cent. It is the communications director for a presidential hopeful who got sacked for making Japan jokes. Haley Barbour's communications director. You know, of course, he's a Republican. And it's funny when people die. It gives me no great hope for this culture. But I wonder, you know, I'm just worried. We know what a long-term thing, a long-term and miserable and heartbreaking process, the aftermath of what happened in Japan is going to be. And I, as I said last night, Robert, I will be curious to see if the for-profit media treat Japan like they treated Haiti. Well, okay, there's no more devastation to see. Everybody's tired of seeing the pitiful people. Time to move on. You know, has CNN parachuted Anderson Cooper in yet? I don't know.
I think they did already.
Do they have Calliopes in Japan?
I don't know. So, but I can't hardly bear to watch it because it's 2 minutes of it and then it's news. I mean, it's a commercial time, and it's just incessant. I mean, I can't take it. You know.
We'll be back with more disaster right after this.
Right after this, yeah. So.
This important commercial message. You know, there's a I ran across. I'm a big fan of Tom Tomorrow. I'm sure you're. Are you familiar with that? Well, he's a comic strip artist, and he had a. He does a strip called This Modern World, and he's really quite funny and quite pointed. But one strip recently, apparently the title of the strip was written Klingon or something, and it's a pair of talking sort of eye stalks, and it's obviously, you know, some foreign world. And it's a pair of newscasters. One's green with yellow spots, and the other one's pink with red spots,
and it's just a mouth stalk and two eye stalks. And in other news, the non-acquiescers, they're talking about Wisconsin, the non-acquiescers of the northernmost plains continue to not acquiesce to the entirely reasonable demands of their regional political overlord. And it goes on in that vein for a while. Then they bring in a regional political... In a related story, a prominent member of the managerial caste bravely spoke out against oppression today. Overlords of large financial institutions such as myself are frequently and callously mocked by the lower castes. How can they be so cruel? Are we not Gloxians too? If you prick us, do we not ooze? And then the whole panel closes, Robert, with exactly what we were talking about. Coming up next, the far more important story of the erratic celebrity Sentient and his increasingly incoherent proclamations. Just how incoherent is he? And what are his intoxicants of choice? We'll have full team coverage after these messages from the Merchant Cast. There it is.
There it is, yeah. I mean, it's this recognition that you have to, that, you know, the United States is really a corporatocracy. So, yeah, it's too hard to say in the morning here.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah. Still waking up.
And it's odd that you would have such a take on it coming from what is arguably the most commercialized aggregation of real estate on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the giant neon signs and the flash and dash of the Ginza and... But no.
Well, I mean, the latest thing is the TPP thing, which is the free trade thing with the food, and they're trying to shove that through, which is going to be a disaster, because that would just lower the food self-sufficiency of the nation, which is only about 40-45%, I think. So, and that would lower it down to about 14%. So, and you have all this crap food coming. I don't understand the concept of you shipping us food across the Pacific. And probably halfway across the United States anyway, to put it here, and then if something goes wrong, then well, you know, we die within a week or so. Or, you know,
have they forgotten that whole mad cow thing? I thought they wanted nothing to do with our beef or anything for quite a while.
Oh, don't worry. That will take a couple more weeks before another instance found. So don't worry about that.
And I don't know if
full faith in.
I don't know if you were still listening last night or at the beginning of the program when it turned out that Fox had pointed out, had literally listed on one of its graphics on screen in showing the location of all the nuclear reactors in Japan. They put one in downtown Tokyo called Shibuya Eggman.
Yeah, I heard that on the podcast. Yeah,
it's a disco.
It's a disco, yeah. But you know, not missing a beat, no correction, no need to look any further at that one. So,
and I'm just finding out that there is apparently, for those who want to follow it, there is an NHK English Japanese World TV News Service free app for the iPhone. So, and if they've got it for the iPhone, odds are they've got it for Android and BlackBerry as well. So people who want to plug in that way. Well, Robert, I am glad first and foremost that you and your lovely family and your neighbors, friends, and colleagues there are okay. Because the minute I saw the news, I began worrying and I began wondering. And lo and behold, as if plugged in, it was a matter of only a few minutes before I got that first email from you. So I appreciate you thinking of us and the Horn family to let us know that you're okay. But secondly, I appreciate the opportunity for you to sort of share some reality, because the creeping, disturbing sense out of all of this is that no matter how much news you watch, at least here in the land of the for-profit media, no matter how much you watch, Robert, ain't none of it real. And
yeah,
so that,
it's all been so distilled. I mean, it's like eating a McDonald's hamburger. It's food, but it's not food. It's with the Japanese TV, it's almost the other extreme. It's almost over analytical, and it's, you know, super serious. And so it's like, wow.
Well, I hope you have a great day, and my, our best to everyone there. And please, you know, keep us informed and up to date.
Oh, okay, sure will. And you take care now.
All right, you too, Robert. So good to hear from you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. Our Kyokushu correspondent, Robert, calling from Japan. Let's move on here and try to get a few more calls in as the program moves toward a conclusion. Let's see. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob.
Hey, what's up, Cossack?
Not too much. Kind of trying to get through the day.
Yeah,
you heard that the fourth of the six reactors just went up.
Yeah, saw that.
And we're talking about the other two are going unstable. So it looks like all six of them are going to be self-terminating.
You know, isn't it interesting that we've had films and stuff about nuclear disasters, and yet not even the Imagineers of Hollywood could imagine anything as awful as this.
Yeah. And, you know, here's part of the problem. How much of a aficionado are you of 50s and 60s sci-fi?
Yeah, pretty good.
Especially Japanese. And you remember all the Gamron and Mothra and...
Oh, sure.
It all went back to the Japanese fear of radiation, and radiation caused mutations. That, well, here you are. You're foolish enough to build these reactors. Here you are. You are now in your own Japanese horror show.
And you know what? It turns out that the stand-in, you know, the big rubber dragon, wasn't nearly as terrifying as reality.
Yeah. I mean...
But some of this engineering stuff, and remember, this is stuff that was engineered by General Electric, okay?
Exactly.
This is American engineering at really not its finest.
Right.
You know, the pools for spent fuel rods on the roof.
On top of the reactor. What kind of frickin' sense does this make?
You know, pump, and they've got, you know, they got to keep water in it just to, you know, keep them from overheating. So that means you've got to pump water uphill.
Yeah. And what nobody seems to be pointing out is that as soon as they pump that seawater into those reactors, that's it. They're toast. They will never be used again, ever.
No, you can't.
But
that's the other thing. A bunch of these were worn out in the first place, weren't they, Cossack?
Pretty much. They were heading on to their 40th anniversary, and that's all they were.
That's pretty much the lifespan.
Yeah.
But it's so expensive to maintain these damn things that trying to keep up with their normal lifespan becomes somewhere between difficult and impossible.
Correct.
And for those, and no, I'm sure nobody within the listening audience, nobody in the Horn family thinks that nuclear power is safe, because it ain't.
No.
At least not as currently configured, if, you know, fission-based and yada yada. But we have to remember, for instance, at Brown's Ferry Nuclear Plant in northwest Alabama, with which I'm familiar because of where I'm from.
Yeah.
First of all, they were within minutes of going to hell back in the late 70s or early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
They were checking for gas leaks.
Yeah.
And I mentioned this before. They were checking for gas leaks with a candle, and they found one.
That'll work.
Shall we say, calamitously. But then, in more recent years, lo and behold, you know, Tennessee Valley Authority didn't give up on their nuke program. And so Browns Ferry came back online, and it turns out that they had to shut it down again, Cossack, because the river got too hot.
Yeah.
The water in the river got warm enough that it was no longer sufficient to cool the reactor core.
And this is a function of I know Coke Industries and the rest of the Coke suckers and whatever don't want to acknowledge it, but it's a function of global climate change. It's getting hotter.
Yeah.
And these things weren't engineered for that. And they, you know, when I heard the guy the flack from MIT, well, you know, these things were engineered on 5-6,000 year scales.
No, they weren't. Jesus.
Well, you can't engineer on a 5,000 year scale if your seawall's only 10 meters tall or 10 meters tall, 30 feet high, 36 feet high.
Well, I told you before I used to work at NCRP, right?
Yeah.
And that's one of the subjects that really interested me. Is how do you mark something that will actually, A, be around for 10,000 years, and B, that people will understand 10,000 years from now? I mean, what language could you possibly write it in?
Well, I got something for you here, and this just popped up in the chat room, and everybody else deserves to hear it. This is astonishing to me, Cossack. Before the meltdown,
right?
As he was commenting on the crisis at Fukushima Daiichi, John McCain had a little something to say. I've got a minute and 26 seconds of video here that I hope will play. This is what you get with a Republican. And it's...
We have a Fox News alert for you. Japanese officials now warning of a possible meltdown.
170,000 people have been evacuated.
We're hearing of multiple explosions.
This could trigger a meltdown.
Worst case scenario.
A full-blown meltdown.
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 I think what happens now is to this power plant as to whether damage is contained or not will have a direct effect on the future of nuclear power in the United States. I mean, let's have a little straight talk.
We talked about offshore drilling, and he said he would, quote, consider offshore drilling. We talked about nuclear power. Well, it has to be safe, environmental, blah, blah, blah.
We all remember significant events in nuclear energy, and the press always highlights these and tries to make us believe that this is a dangerous form, when in fact it's not a dangerous form. We must eliminate the layers and layers of bureaucracy and regulation, which do not add to the safety of that power produced.
Senator Obama will tell you, as the extreme environmentalists do, it has to be safe.
We must have policies in place that spur the development of more zero-emission nuclear power.
Americans can't afford to ignore nuclear power.
Nuclear is both safe and reliable.
Obviously, this was an event that no one has ever really anticipated outside of science fiction movies.
Get off my yard.
No one could have possibly expected this.
No one could have ever imagined that terrorists would use an airplane as a missile. They can't imagine any of the ramifications of their horrid, horrid, deadly, putrescent policies. They can't imagine that chickens come home to roost.
Well, and the problem of it here, Bob, is that people like Homer Simpson exist. There are people like this actually working in real nuclear plants. I mean, the whole thing.
Well, I'm a little bit more of an optimist. This doesn't look like, they don't look like a whole lot of people problems here. There looks like a bunch of design problems, engineer problems, architect problems. But more than that, it's a corporate greed problem, isn't it, Cossack?
Yeah. Well, first, when you're dealing with something like a nuclear reactor, you cannot go the El Cheapo route. You can't afford.
But the nature of capitalism is to precisely always go the El Cheapo route, isn't it?
Exactly. But that's what I'm saying. You, as long as you're doing that, you have to expect nuclear mishaps, quote unquote mishaps. Yeah. It's if you don't build it structurally strong enough, it won't work. It will fail because you're dealing with extreme conditions. Yeah. It'll be like you're expecting a boiler to last for 50 years continuously of being run 24 hours a day. Things break down, Bob.
Yeah, it don't work like that.
No, it doesn't. And in the final analysis, no matter how well it's engineered, you know, they say you can never make anything totally foolproof because fools are endlessly ingenious.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of that dirt dam near Whitesville that's holding back the 9.8 billion gallons of toxic waste.
Yeah.
And I hope you understand, I'm not trying to diminish the horror that's going on over there. But you know, we have all over the globe instances, Cossack, where people who are being paid by profiteers run around saying things like, you know, we've engineered for 6,000 years, or no one could have imagined.
Yeah.
Well, damn it, Cossack, imagining is their job.
Exactly. I mean, you know, it's like nobody could have imagined a tsunami. Excuse me, you're in an earthquake area. What happens when you have an earthquake? You have tsunamis. Duh. I mean, just a tiny little bit of thought here, folks.
I know. Just a little.
Yeah. And I mean, if you haven't engineered for this particular situation, well, you're the fool then. Because you should understand this is what you expect in these circumstances. You're building a reactor in an earthquake prone area. If you have a big earthquake, you're going to have a big tsunami on the rebound.
Bingo. Exactly.
And you have to count for that in your calculations. You have to account for that scenario. Obviously, they didn't.
They didn't. Cossack, I got to run along, brother, because I am going to try to hit some more of these blinkies before the night ends. You take care, all right?
You too.
All right, thanks.
Take care, Bob.
Bye now.
Good night.
The Cossack calling from North Florida. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Hey, Jim, what's up?
Well, an awful lot has been discussed previous to this conversation. But, you know, I can't understand why people cannot realize or forget the history that we have been given. First, I remember in 1978 the movie China Syndrome.
Right.
And how, because of the contractor's faulty wells, as portrayed so well in that movie, that Ventura plant nearly destroyed Southern California, or Three Mile Island, this type of thing.
But I remember when China Syndrome came out and the whole nuclear flak crowd said, oh, that's just science fiction. And you heard it from John McCain just right now. I don't think that's just science fiction.
Listen, you've got these contractors who build these plants, who cut all kinds of corners, who probably do take one well and pretend like that is the well that surrounds the core or this, that, and the other, and they just duplicate the well six times as was portrayed in that movie. This stuff happens. And, you know, who can call them to account? Who they are they really accountable? And going forth from China Syndrome to Three Mile Island to Chernobyl, and, you know,
and even with the lessons of Chernobyl in hand, Jim.
Yeah, I
that's
mean,
25 years ago, a quarter of a century ago, and this happens.
And if I'm not mistaken, you know, how many times have you and I had this conversation about no nukes before? Remember?
Yes.
And what I said about the sticker I had on my bumper, no nukes, and the guy I was working for, the principal of the school where I taught, said, what do you have against pussy? Does that mean no nukey? Remember that?
Yes.
And when I saw this thing happen, it was about 3:30 Thursday morning, and I thought to myself, dear God, the first thing I thought about was, what about all the 55 nuclear facilities in Japan? And the next morning, I was listening to our favorite radio host over here, and I'm not going to mention his name.
Oh, thank you. We'll just refer to him as the sub-genius.
No, I just call him an outright blatant asshole.
Well, that works too.
He does. And he was discussing this nuclear problem, and he said, well, basically all it is, it's just like when a stove gets hot. What you do is you just cut the stove off, and it cools down. And now listen.
Sometimes I'm grateful for the fact that I can't get that signal over here.
Well, listen to this. And I cut. And I just waited for a second. I said, "Well, I just wonder what kind of response that he's going to get to this." Some idiot called in and says, "Well, I guess next thing you know, Godzilla's going to pop out of Tokyo Bay." And they both started laughing.
They just can't resist it.
Couldn't resist it. And I finally just picked up the phone and called that son of a bitch. And I said, let me tell you something. I said, in the first place, you know, I've always judged people by their types of senses of humor. And I think that what has just been said, the fact that you were laughing, just tells me what kind of a person you really are. I said, you've got people there who are dying, who are already dead, who are going to die because these isotopes have been released. I said, do you not realize that when they build these facilities, they're built out of concrete and steel, and their exposure to the core of this thing does not improve with age. It wears out. And that was just totally lost upon these people. And then other ridiculous comments came, which really brought to mind how stupidly wooden, and how totally lacking in compassion.
But see, you know, there would be compassion if they were white people, Jim.
I'm going to tell you something, buddy. South Carolina is under the same type of class 3 earthquake zone as Japan, as is San Francisco. And can you imagine there are 4 nuclear or 5 nuclear power plants in South Carolina, okay?
Yep.
Can you imagine what would happen if that one of those things were to blow? Wonder what they'd say then. Wonder if they would start saying, like they were saying, one guy said, well, this is in response, God's getting even with Japs for bombing Pearl Harbor. That was one of the comments I heard. I'm not kidding.
Then was 9/11 God's response for us nuking Hiroshima and Nagasaki? Oh, Jesus.
The mind just reels. And to tell you the truth, my heart goes out to these people. And, you know, this is permanent. I mean,
yeah, meltdowns are forever.
I mean, how can they extract the core from one of these things? They can't. It's there. And if it blows, and, you know, they're pumping boric acid and salt water into these things, how much cover-up can they do to prevent the radiation from spreading around and making the northern part of Japan totally uninhabitable? And yet the only thing you hear about on CNN is the global effect of the Japanese economy upon us, because their debt is, what, 2.5 times ours. That's what I hear about all this stuff. And when you see the fallout effects of what's happened to these people, as happened in Chernobyl, I mean, you've got a part of the Ukraine the size of Great Britain that is not inhabitable. Is that not correct?
That's what it's rapidly devolving into, yes.
Well, that's what's going to happen to Japan. which is the third largest economy in the world. I mean, that might keep it in the public eye for a while, but not the, what has happened to these people whose lives are swept away within just minutes. And to build these structures over these earthquake faults, there is no type of construction.
Right. Who, yeah. The who could have imagined a tsunami would follow an earthquake?
Duh.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happens. The two go hand in hand,
yes.
And yet, for people to make light of something like this, and for this asshole, for Aflac saying, well, the Japs don't have to go to the beach comes to them. You know, if I could have seen that son of a bitch, I would have shot him right there on the spot. I would have pulled out my Walther and just shot his ass right on the spot. That's how angry I was when I heard that. For you to be so lacking in compassion.
Yeah, and like I said, 50 Cent and Haley Barbour's, that's the one that got me. You know, Gilbert Gottfried is an ass. Haley Barbour's communications director, and apparently he had a habit of sending around such witticisms in his morning emails to other staffers and quote-unquote supporters.
You know, when I think about that part of the country, I guess I'm talking about the former part of the Confederacy, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It would be so much better if they just left. We wouldn't have to deal with those idiots anymore. And I would love to put up a website enticing them to do that, and I would call it heyasshole@franklymydearidontgiveadamn.com.
Yeah. With that, Jim, I'm going to roll along. Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it. And I appreciate your compassion.
Well, don't be too peripatetic now.
I will try not to be.
All right, take care.
All right, bye now. Our buddy Jim, calling from not too... See, he doesn't have the luxury I have. He is within radio range of the fifth smallest radio market in America, and he gets to hear... what passes for stimulating intellectual right-wing conversation every day. And trust me, you don't want no part of it. Let's try to get as many of these in as we can. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
Hey, Bob. I'm regusted with our government.
Yeah, regusted, re-disgusted.
Well, it's just a worse form of disgusted. I would like for most of the Congress just to leave. All the Republicans and almost all the Democrats.
Did you hear today that Rand Paul accused the EPA of ruining his toilet?
No. Oh, no.
I wish I was lying, but I'm not. Rand?
I know they're trying to do away with the EPA.
Yet Rand Paul said it's the EPA's fault his toilet won't flush.
Well, get a plumber in there if he can't fix it. We'll have this kind of problem.
It's just amazing. Just amazing.
Talking about the catastrophe, I heard a little bit of who's the guy that used to be governor of Tennessee?
Oh, Lamar Alexander.
Our buddy
Luke in Knoxville refers to him as the Plaid Avenger. Yes.
The Plaid Avenger.
Yeah, because he always shows up in that red that plaid.
Yeah, flannel.
Right.
Uh-huh. He was talking about this wasn't, you know, didn't mean anything about the us not having nuclear power. And he was talking about Three Mile Island. He said, nobody died from that. And but come to find out, somebody I heard on the TV said that Alexander was involved with somebody that makes these.
Oh, yeah, he is in up to his eyebrows. He wants more nuke plants for Tennessee the way that they want more nuke plants for South Carolina. David in South Carolina writing and says, he sends me a statistic, South Carolina has 7 nuclear reactors. Utilities are pressing for 4 more, and more nuke plants are favored by 57% of the people in South Carolina. So that kind of answers the question that Jim put a minute ago.
Well, I was surprised to find out how many we have down here, and one of them's very close to me.
And they want more, and they
want to build another one.
And just like Sandra was talking about, bill you on the front end for those too.
Well, they've already said that. They said set up front, it would cost the taxpayers. I forget how many billion. I think it was $3 billion, and you know it'd be more than that. But they can't do anything easy. You know, simple, like wind and solar.
Right. You know, I expect any day now the Republicans, you know, John Boehner's Republicans in the House, I expect them to introduce a bill calling for the for more building of nuclear power plants, because that's kind of, you know, that's kind of the hooting and hollering that they did after the BP disaster. Remember, that was not quite a year ago. The BP disaster took place, and what did the Republicans do? Hollered, well, you know, we can't let this slow our drilling down. You know, one bad well doesn't, got to get that, drill more, drill, baby, drill. Drill here, drill there, drill now, drill everywhere. So don't be surprised, Juanita, when you see Repiglicans hollering for the immediate beginning of construction projects for, you know, new nuclear plants, because we're smarter than them Japanese.
You know, Bob, I'll tell you, those people, I don't know, they just can't surprise me much. You know, they do shock me every now and then, but you know, but there's no telling what they'll do. They're such liars, and
but don't be surprised.
No compassion.
None.
You know, for
they have no compassion because they have no morals, and they have no morals because they have no conscience. And since they have no conscience, that makes them psychopaths and sociopaths. And there you go, the Repiglican party in a nutshell. Hey, Juanita, I hate to do it, but I am going to run on simply because I've got a whole bunch of blinking lights, and I want to try to hit at least a couple more before the show runs out.
Good night.
You too.
Okay.
Bye now. And let's see. Well, maybe some of y'all are still here. I don't know. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey,
Susan, what's up?
I've heard people talk about building power plants and rebuilding the Japanese power plants, nuclear plants. Guys, you don't put nuclear plants in a subduction zone ever, because sooner or later, Mother Nature rears up and bites you in the butt.
Yeah, well, Mother Nature will give you an object lesson in why you ought not do that.
Exactly.
Mother Nature is not being cruel and not being brutal and not being no. It's just when you can't figure things out for yourself, you'll get a little lesson.
Yeah, I live in about the only other subduction zone in the United States. Honey, I know you don't put nuclear reactors here. It's just not a good idea. Put them someplace else if you must. I would prefer you didn't use them at all.
Well, and that's ultimately the answer. Let's not do this at all.
Yeah, there is a company, Seville, Spain is using solar tower technology to real good effect. And you can find an article on that in Google. If you Google Seville and solar tower technology, it's really, really neat. And we've got these lovely, great big deserts that are just sitting there waiting and raining down sunlight for free. And admittedly, they cost heavy to build.
No, they really don't. They really don't. No, they don't. The cost is comparable with coal, the cost is comparable with nuclear, the cost is comparable with gas. Building grid 2.0 would be no more of a debilitating cost to this country than the current expansion of every nuke plant and every new coal-fired power plant that's on that has been on the table in recent years.
Well, I was talking about the solar tower technology. And it does have a high-end startup cost. The thing is, a nuclear power plant doesn't.
Right, and it and a nuclear power plant doesn't have the life cycle.
Yeah, the towers, once you get them built, they're done. All you've got to do is replace an occasional broken mirror. There's no other cost. The sunlight is free.
For at least the next couple, right? For at least the next couple of billion years, then we gotta. Then by then we really do have to have found another planet.
Oh God, I hope so.
Susan, have yourself a wonderful evening. It's try to get out of here.
Yeah, love to everybody. Bye.
All right, bye now. And if you're still here, we will try to. Yes. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey Bob, it's Mark from Florida.
Hey Mark, I hate to tell you, you got about a minute.
Bob, I just wanted to let you know that at the nuclear power plant where I work, one of my people I work with made a comment about Japan. I agree with all the callers tonight. And I said, you know, not only do the Americans impose the euro on the Europeans, we impose nuclear power on the Japanese. Those are all Japanese power plants built for our profit that our citizens don't share with, nor do the Japanese. And I said, if you're so knowledgeable, and so hateful, do you not realize we put an oil embargo on Japan in the late 30s to force them to attack Pearl Harbor, and they used to work for us when we invaded China, and that's why the Koreans are not happy with the Japanese till today. I would just share with the listeners that I spoke with you last week, Bob, and I made a comment about nuclear power, and there are other solutions, like osmotic power. So any case, also one final point, Bob. They told the public that they're running on plutonium, they're running on cesium-137, way more cheaper, way more unstable, way more dangerous. Have a good night, Bob.
Thank you, Mark. And I think we need to have an expanded conversation about this, hopefully as quickly as I get back, because people need your expertise.
Now, I'm rudimentary, but I'm usually real accurate when I do stuff.
Okay, Mark, take care.
All right, Bob.
Bye now. An information-packed program tonight, and I thank you all for your contributions there, too, whether listening or calling or emailing. Thank you very, very much. One email to mention before we move along. Had a note in from Kate saying thank you. She said, thank you, Robert, for calling in. You've been in my thoughts. So glad you're okay. I've been worrying about you and your family. See how it works? We worry about each other. So it is time to get out of here. Rick Smith is on the way next. Thanks to everybody who makes the program go. Thanks especially to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch. And, well, always, 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 Gina, Judy,